Clipper Audio presents an unabridged recording of Desperate Remedies by Christina Courtney, narrated by Julie Teal. This work is copyrighted 2013 by Christina Courtney. This recording is copyrighted 2014 by W.F. Howes Limited. Lexi Holloway falls desperately in love with the Earl of Synley after a brief encounter at a ball. But Synley is already engaged to be married, and the heartbroken Lexi leaves for a new life in Italy. Years later, she returns home to find that much has changed. The once notorious Earl is a reformed character and no longer married. But it appears that his life may be in danger. And now, Desperate Remedies. Prologue, 1816. It was most definitely the wedding of the season, although not for the right reasons, that was for certain. St. George's, in Hanover Square, was filled to overflowing with most of the members of the ton, and as many of its hangers-on as could squeeze themselves in. Lexi Holloway found herself boxed in between her mother and a fat, elderly matron who had a turban balanced precariously on top of her head. It was adorned with a huge ostrich feather, which kept waving in Lexi's direction. It annoyed her as it tickled either her cheek or her ear, but she couldn't ask the lady to move, since there was nowhere for her to go. Lexi wished herself anywhere on earth but here. Not because she minded being cooped up like this, but because she didn't want to see this particular marriage take place. She knew that when the Earl of Synley took his marriage oath, her heart would shatter into a thousand fragments that could never again be rejoined. He was the only man she would ever love. "Piffle!" her mother would have said scornfully if Lexi had ever dared to confess to such a thing. Lady Holloway didn't believe in love, only marriages of convenience that allowed both parties to gain something, which was probably why she hadn't been as shocked as everyone else when Synley's engagement had been announced in the Gazette.
"Dear Lord, he's marrying a woman old enough to be his mother," Sir Gerald, Lexi's father, had exclaimed over breakfast on that fateful day. "In fact, I seem to recall she was his mother's best friend. And if I'm not mistaken, she came out at the same time as my sister some 20 years ago. Preposterous, I say."
Lady Holloway grabbed the paper from him and perused the announcement with a nod.
Yes, to be sure, she's a bit long in the tooth, but look what he stands to gain from it. An entire estate that abuts his own and lots of money besides. That's worth sacrificing yourself for, don't you think?
Surely he could have found himself a young heiress, Sir Gerald protested.
You know very well no parent in his right mind would allow him within a mile of their daughter. He hasn't a feather to fly with, and his reputation, well...
Lady Holloway shuddered delicately.
Depend upon it, he's done the only thing he can in the circumstances. It's either this or debtor's prison.
Neither of them had noticed that their younger daughter had gone very quiet and was no longer eating her breakfast. Lexi had never told a soul that she was in love with Synley. It wouldn't have done her any good if she had. So they had no reason to suspect anything when she excused herself from the table, claiming a headache. Now here she sat, waiting to watch Synley marry his mother's erstwhile friend, Lady Catherine Downes. It was indeed preposterous, and Lexi could only wonder how desperate a man had to be in order to contemplate such a thing. He was making himself a laughing stock. But judging by his calm demeanour, as he waited by the altar, he didn't give a damn what anyone thought. He turned and surveyed the crowd, as if daring them to say something disparaging. She thought his gaze stopped for an instant as it rested on her, with a fleeting look of regret, but it was over so quickly she probably imagined it. After all, they barely knew one another. She turned to watch the bride walk down the aisle, resplendent in silk and lace, both of a silvery hue. Lady Catherine didn't look bad for her age, but she was no beauty, and never had been. She came to a halt next to her husband-to-be, and smiled up at him with what looked like genuine affection. Lexi thought she also glimpsed relief, and perhaps gratitude in Lady Catherine's eyes. And Sinley returned her smile without hesitation. As the bride put her hand on his arm, he covered it with his own and gave it a squeeze. It was almost as though he was reassuring her that they were doing the right thing. Lexi could only assume they were both happy with their bargain, and she had to swallow down a lump that rose in her throat. As the service began, however, she couldn't help but wonder why Lady Catherine had agreed to such a sham of a marriage. She supposed she must have her reasons. Perhaps she'd simply been bowled over by the attention of a much younger, sinfully handsome man. Or she'd been bamboozled. Either way, Lexi envied her, because she was the lucky lady who would leave this church as Sinley's wife. How I wish it were me. She tried to erase that thought from her mind, shutting her eyes tightly in order to prevent the feelings of jealousy from choking her. Stop it, she told herself sternly. He was never yours and never will be. It was time to stop daydreaming and enter reality. But she would never forget the day her heart broke. Chapter 1 1820. The English weather was never at its best in April, but having spent the last 3 years in Italy, Lexi had no complaints. She positively welcomed the chill wind, and had it been permitted, she would have asked to ride up front with the coachman just for the sheer joy of feeling soft rain on her face once more. After the dry heat of Naples, she was certain it would do her complexion the world of good. Still, there would be time enough, no doubt, to make that particular wish come true during the months ahead. Her destination, Hawthorne Manor, was a rambling Elizabethan building which looked as though the various members of the Hawthorne family had just added on a room whenever they needed extra space. There was no symmetry whatsoever, and to Lexi this was part of its charm. To everyone else, it was a nuisance. You've no idea how the servants complain about the endless twists and turns in the corridors, not to mention all the unexpected little steps up and down the various parts of the house, her sister Margaret had told her the last time she visited, making a face which clearly showed that she agreed. It is most vexatious, I tell you, not to mention the fact that the kitchen is situated positively miles from the dining room, and so the food's invariably cold before it even reaches us. Puts George quite out of humour. Since most everything put Margaret's husband in a bad mood, this didn't surprise Lexi, and she could even sympathise with her sister to a certain degree. However, having the privilege of living in such a house would far outweigh the inconveniences, in her opinion. Had she been lucky enough to have a husband with an estate like Hawthorne Manor, she would never have complained. Sadly, she had no husband of any kind, although, admittedly, that was her own fault. "I wash my hands of you," her father told her at the end of her one and only London season. "I've done my best, and you've not taken advantage of the opportunities you've been afforded. Now you may endeavour to support yourself, for I shall no longer do so." There had been no less than 3 offers of marriage, which was gratifying, in a way, but she'd turned them all down. She didn't want to be a broodmare stuck in a loveless marriage, and had decided she would rather live her life alone, or as alone as any female could be in this day and age. Her father hadn't really meant his harsh words, and Lexi knew he would never cast her out entirely. But she had felt herself to be a burden, nonetheless. She had therefore set about finding employment as a lady's companion. She couldn't have wished for a better employer than kind Lady Belvedere, who had treated her more as a daughter than a servant, and had taken her off to the continent. Sadly, the old woman had now passed away, and Lexie had been forced to return to England, where matters had changed somewhat. Her parents had both died in a carriage accident, and Sir Gerald's place, as head of the family, had been filled by her brother John, now Sir John, although Lexie refused to address him thus.
"You may have twisted father round your little finger, Alexandra, but don't think you can do so with me," he told her almost immediately upon her arrival home. "I have my own family to think of, and I'm sorry to say there's no place for you here at Holloway Park. You have the small annuity father bequeathed to you, but I doubt you can live on that. However, I believe Margaret may have use for you, and I've informed her that she is to expect you within the next few days."
His pompous manner grated on Lexie, as did his insistence on calling her by her full name. No one else ever did.
"I see. Am I not to be consulted about such an arrangement?" she inquired, trying hard to hold her temper in check. She had earned her own keep now for years, and had neither expected nor wanted to live off her brother's charity. "What if I have found another position to supplement my income?"
John frowned.
"Well, if you have, it's a deuced nuisance. It's your duty to help your family in the first instance, and Margaret's been nagging at me for ages to provide her with assistance."
Lexie thought to herself that Margaret had probably meant the financial kind, since her husband was forever in debt due to excessive gaming. But John either didn't want to acknowledge this, or he was being obtuse. He also clearly couldn't see the contradiction in his words. She was expected to help her family, while he refused to do so. She stifled a sigh. "As it happens, I haven't yet looked for one. I shall be happy to assist Margaret for a short while, but do not suppose that it's a permanent arrangement, John. I'm no one's chattel to be ordered about. Do you understand me?" She fixed him with a glare, and he had the grace to flush. But he blustered something placating, and she said no more. What was the use, after all? He would never change. As the carriage neared its destination now, she became aware of the sound of rapid hoofbeats and looked out at the window. The maid who'd been sent to accompany her was fast asleep, and nothing seemed to wake her. Lexie was able to crane her neck in a very unladylike fashion to see what was happening. The coachman pulled hard on the reins in order to avoid a rider who came shooting out of a copse of trees to their right and crossed the road in front of them. He flashed by in a blur, jumping a ditch with an elegance that hardly broke the horse's stride, but Lexie didn't notice. She saw nothing except the man himself.
"Sinley," she whispered. What on earth was he doing here?
Then she remembered that his estate was not that far from Hawthorne Manor. She could only assume she was passing through his land at the moment. An instant later, he'd returned, his skittish horse prancing alongside the carriage. Lexie pulled back from the window so he wouldn't catch her gawping, but she could still see him clearly. He didn't appear to have changed much, although his expression was much sterner than she remembered it.
"I apologize for startling you, ma'am," he said, bowing in her general direction. Lexie knew he couldn't quite see her since her face was in the shadowy interior of the carriage. "It was not my intention. I'm afraid this horse is still a bit unruly, and something spooked him."
"You are forgiven, sir," Lexie murmured, although she heard the coachman grumble something about wild young men. "I'm sure you did not ride that way on purpose."
"No, indeed. I shall endeavour to control this beast better in future. You are certain no harm has come to you?"
"Thank you. I'm very well, and so is my maid."
"I will trouble you no more, then. Good day to you, ma'am."
He took off at a slower pace, affording Lexie an excellent view of his broad back and shoulders, clad in a perfectly fitting green coat. The sight of him stirred up memories she'd kept suppressed for so long. The painful day of his marriage. The weeks of heartbreak she had suffered in silence afterwards. She had thought these the silly fancies of a young girl, fresh out of the schoolroom. But now she wasn't so sure. Just one look at his face had made her entire body tremble. She took a deep breath. This won't do, she admonished herself. He had no doubt forgotten about their one and only encounter long since, and she ought to follow suit. Nothing good could come out of dwelling on it. Sinley and her infatuation with him were in the past, where they belonged, and she would make sure they stayed there.
Lexi, my dear, you're here at last.
Margaret greeted her from her position, lying down on a chaise longue in her private sitting room. Lexi was forced to bend over to give her a sisterly peck on the cheek.
Indeed I am. I trust I find you well.
Lexi glanced at her sister's recumbent form with raised eyebrows and took in the jumble of glasses, vials and smelling salts on the table next to her.
Oh, yes, don't mind me. Just a little fatigued, you know. There was a card party last night at the Stallbridges, and they must needs practice economy by serving the most awful wine. I swear it was pure vinegar, but one has to be polite, of course. So what could I do but drink it? Now I'm suffering for my kindness.
Lexi didn't believe a word of this tale, but forbore to say so. Margaret and her husband always drank to excess, and it would seem this was still the case. Well, if her sister had a sore head, she deserved it.
So what is it you want my help with?
Lexi removed her bonnet and sat down on a chair near the fire.
I understand from John that you're in dire need of my services. Well, as to that, he does tend to exaggerate, as you know. The fact of the matter is that dear little Rupert's governess left without so much as a by your leave, and I simply cannot find anyone suitable to replace her. I thought perhaps you...
Margaret turned her limpid gaze on her sister, no doubt hoping for sympathy.
Pah! Lexi said. You mean the little brat frightened her away and no one else wants to take him on? Really, Lexi, there is no need to be rude. Rupert's merely, shall we say, high-spirited. It's not his fault if these women are so sensitive. Well, have you thought of hiring a tutor for him instead? Perhaps it's a man's authority that's needed here. Oh, but he's so young still. I don't want him treated severely. And they can be so mean, some of them. One simply cannot trust them to be fair.
He's 8, Margaret.
A mere baby, Margaret sighed. You wouldn't understand, not being a mother yourself. But I do worry so. And he's my only chick, as you know.
Lexi thought to herself that she understood only too well, despite not having children of her own. A little severity was exactly what young Rupert needed. But Margaret had always spoiled him, and she knew she would never win this particular argument.
I don't know, Margaret. I'm not sure I'm qualified to be a governess. I've been working as a lady's companion, which is vastly different.
Rupert should have someone who knows what they're doing and has experience of that sort of thing. Besides, I'm only visiting for a short while.
You've only just arrived, and you're contemplating leaving already?
Margaret's face took on a wounded expression. Not immediately, no, of course not, but surely you need to find someone who can stay longer to teach Rupert. I dare say continuity is what he needs with a governess or tutor he trusts.
But that's the problem exactly. I cannot find any such paragon.
Margaret squeezed out a tear, although Lexi doubted it was genuine. She sighed.
Very well. I'll take him on for a few weeks, but I'm not staying above 2 months. I will need to find proper employment by then, else I'll be penniless.
As to that, I'm sure dear George will pay you the going rate.
Yes, and pigs might fly. George never paid anyone, as Margaret well knew, which was probably another reason why she was having trouble keeping her staff. And Lexi refused to be their unpaid labour any more than the recent governesses had. Family or not, she too needed to earn a wage. She couldn't help but worry about her future. Being an unmarried spinster by choice was all very well, but she would have to save up enough to live on when her years as a paid companion came to an end. It wasn't something she could do forever, especially as most employers would prefer someone young and energetic to run their errands. This was not the time to worry about such things, however. As Margaret had pointed out, she'd only just arrived, and she intended to enjoy her stay, despite her governess duties.
"I'd better go and say hello to my charge, then," Lexi said and stood up. "Just as well to let him know what's coming."
She smiled at the alarm that flared in Margaret's eyes.
"You will be kind, won't you? He seemed to enjoy your company last time you visited, although that was when he was very young."
"Yes, of course. I'm only joking. You may depend on it. But I'll also make sure he knows who's in charge."
Chapter 2
Lexi found Rupert in the nursery, kicking some toy soldiers round the floor with a sulky expression on his face.
"Hello, young varmint. How are you?"
She smiled at him and held her arms out for a greeting, but he merely frowned at her.
"Have you no greeting for your favourite aunt?"
He remained silent.
"Then I don't suppose you'll want the present I brought you all the way from Italy, either."
She turned to leave the room and hid a smile when she heard him run across the floor.
"Aunt Lexi, wait! What have you brought for me? Is it a rifle like you promised in your letter to Mama?"
She swiveled back to face him and held out her arms again without saying anything. He took the hint and threw himself into her embrace, muttering,
"Sorry, didn't mean to be rude."
"That's better," she said with a smile. "For a moment there, I was beginning to think you didn't like me any more."
"You know I do. In fact, you're the only lady I do like, apart from Mama, of course."
Coming from an 8-year-old, this sounded hilarious, but Lexi managed not to laugh. She knew he was serious, and took it as the compliment he intended.
"Very well. Will you come and talk to me while I unpack, and then I'll show you what I've brought?"
He skipped along quite happily as they went back down to the second floor and along the corridor to Lexi's room. He even began to chatter on about a new horse his father had bought him.
"Well, Jefferson is a pony, really, but a big one, Aunt Lexi. Almost like a real horse, and spirited. Will you come riding with me? Father says I'm not to leave the park, but if I'm with you, I'm sure he wouldn't mind."
"That would be lovely, if there's a horse I can borrow. I don't own one, you see."
"I'm sure you can have Mama's. She never rides. And I heard one of the grooms say that Shireen does nothing but stand there and eat all day, and if she doesn't have more exercise soon, she'll be fat as a flan."
"Dear me, we can't have that." Lexi laughed.
"I see I shall have to take poor Shireen out every day. What do you say? Shall we start each morning with a ride? Then perhaps you'll be able to sit still for a few lessons afterwards at least."
Rupert made a face.
"Do I have to have lessons? It's so boring, and I'm no good at them. Miss Ainscough kept hitting my knuckles all the time because I got my sums wrong so often. See?"
He held out hands that were scabby across the top to demonstrate the truth of his statement. Lexi frowned. She didn't hold with hitting children, as she believed it only made them more nervous and disinclined to learn.
"Don't worry, I never hit anyone unless they attack me. And I'm a much better teacher than Miss Ainscough. Shall we make a little bet that I'll have you doing sums in a trice?"
"How much?" Rupert wasn't his father's son for nothing, and the lure of money was as irresistible to him as it was to George.
"I'll give you a whole guinea
if you get them all right by the end of the third week of my stay here. How about that?
A whole guinea?
Done. They shook hands on this deal. But we still go riding every day.
Of course. It's impossible to learn sums without riding first,
Lexi told him solemnly. He chatted on some more while she unpacked her personal belongings. The clothes she had brought had already been put into a wardrobe by a maid, but she preferred to see to everything else herself. At the bottom of her travelling chest lay a parcel wrapped in brown paper, which she gave to Rupert to reward him for his patience.
Here you are. This is your gift, but you are not to use it without supervision. Is that clear? Otherwise, I'll have to take it back again.
He nodded and tore off the paper in record time, revealing a long, thin wooden box with his name painted on it. Inside, he found a miniature rifle just right for his size, with his initials engraved on the stock. His eyes opened wide, and a grin of delight spread from ear to ear.
"Thank you," he breathed. "Thank you so much, Aunt Lexi. You're the best."
He hurled himself into her arms, without prompting this time, and gave her a fierce hug, which she returned. She smiled at him again, but admonished, "It's not a toy. You do realize that. You may only load it and shoot it with an adult present."
"Yes, I understand."
He turned eager eyes on her.
"Do you know how to shoot? Can you show me? When can we start?" "No, wait, you're a girl. I don't suppose you can do it. I'll have to find someone else."
"On the contrary, my father taught me to shoot when I was quite young. He said it might come in useful. And indeed it did. In Italy once, I had to defend the lady I worked for from highwaymen. Imagine their surprise when they were shot at by me." Rupert goggled at her, clearly impressed.
"Capital," he said. "So when can we start?"
Although she was weary from the long journey, Lexi couldn't resist the plea in Rupert's brown eyes.
"No time like the present. Let's go and find an empty field and something to shoot at." "Really, Lexi, what were you thinking? He's only 8, for heaven's sake. A firearm of all things. Most unsuitable. You'll have to take it back."
Margaret was scowling at her sister across the dining table, as Lexi had known she would. But she ignored this and looked to her brother-in-law for assistance. George didn't disappoint her.
"Oh, do stop mollycoddling the boy," he snapped at his wife. "He'll grow up to be a namby-pamby sort if he's not allowed to do anything. I think it's an excellent idea to teach him to shoot. Why, I was only 6 myself when I started learning. Past time, if you ask me. Hey, Jasper, what do you say?"
Lexi glanced at the gentleman seated opposite her, who'd been introduced as George's nephew, Jasper Torrington. She'd taken an instant dislike to him, because he wore the exaggerated clothes of a dandy. He also looked the sort of man who fancied himself a cut above the rest, without good reason. As far as Lexi could see, he had nothing much to recommend him, apart from superficial charm. He didn't even have a title to warrant his apparent feelings of superiority. It was a mystery to her, what he'd based his high opinion of himself on. But naturally she didn't show her antipathy in any way.
"Quite right," Jasper drawled. "You need to treat the boy like a man, else he'll never become one."
Margaret pouted and pointedly changed the subject, but Lexi knew the battle wasn't over yet. As soon as they left the men to their port, she would be harangued once more, but she was determined not to pay her sister any heed. It really was time for Rupert to grow up a little. It was no wonder he was wayward if he was treated like a baby at all times.
"What do you think, Miss Holloway?"
Lexi looked up to find Jasper staring at her with a glint in his eyes that she didn't quite like.
"I beg your pardon? I'm afraid I was wool-gathering. Must be the long journey. It's quite done me in."
"I was talking about George and Margaret's neighbour, Lord Sinley,
who happens to be a relative of mine through his marriage to Lady Catherine Downes. I said it's a pity he doesn't socialise a great deal. Would make things more interesting around these parts.
As to that, I wouldn't know, sir. Lexi kept her expression neutral. It wouldn't do to let on that the mere mention of the man's name still made her tingle. I'm not acquainted with Lord Sinley.
Jasper Gafford. No. Don't suppose you are. He's not the type of man a respectable young lady would have been introduced to. I don't see why he can't come out of seclusion now, George grumbled. His wife's been dead nearly 2 years, so it's not as if he's mourning any longer.
Lexi froze. Sinley was a widower. This was news to her, and she had to struggle to keep her composure in the face of such a momentous fact. She took a deep breath and tried to sound completely disinterested when she asked, "Why would you wish him to, socialise, if he's so reluctant?"
"He must be rich as Croesus after that strange marriage of his," Jasper said. "George wants a chance to fleece the man of some of his ill-gotten gains."
"Ill-gotten?" Lexi took secret umbrage on Sinley's behalf. He may have made an unorthodox marriage, but he certainly hadn't cheated anyone in order to acquire his rich wife.
"Don't be obtuse, Lexi," George growled. "Everyone knows he must have had some hold over the poor woman to make her marry him. Made her a laughing stock, and for what? Just so he could live out his life in luxury. Pah!"
Lexi wanted to protest that, as far as she'd heard tell, Sinley had been laughed at too. But clearly neither of them had minded, since they had gone ahead with the marriage in any case. They couldn't have known that it would prove such a short one. She held her tongue, however, and feigned indifference.
"Well, if that's the way you feel, why don't you just invite him over?"
"Try that. Won't come," George said. "Sent round a terse note saying he was occupied with business matters, I ask you. What would he have to do? He has a steward for that sort of thing, like we all do. No need for him to traipse around the countryside, personally checking fences and ditches. But apparently he insists on it. He even helped one of his tenants with putting up a roof once, I heard. Preposterous. He's an earl, for heaven's sake."
"Well, I, for one, am grateful to the man for refusing," Margaret cut in. "From what I've heard, he has the devil's own luck at cards, so no doubt he'd have fleeced you, not the other way round. Besides, he's the most disagreeable man I've ever had the misfortune to meet."
Lexi could have disputed that statement as well, but didn't. What was the point? It was clear that none of them would be meeting up with Sinley in the foreseeable future, so it didn't matter. However, a small part of her couldn't help but wish it wasn't so, especially if he was indeed a free man. Shireen proved to be a lovely, honey-coloured mare with a sweet temper, yet fast and raring to go. Lexi had no trouble controlling her, since she was an experienced horsewoman. And she was happy to note that riding was something her nephew did well, too. "You have an excellent seat, Rupert," she commented, as they cantered off on their morning ride the following day. "Did your father teach you to ride?"
"No, father's always too busy. Melton, the head groom, you know, gives me lessons, and he says he's pleased with me."
He beamed at her.
"I love riding, and isn't Jefferson just the best?"
He patted the neck of his pony and received a whinny in response. It was clear the two of them had bonded, which was as it should be.
"Indeed, he is quite splendid. Now, which way shall we go?"
There was a small forest near Hawthorne Manor, and although Lexi wasn't sure whether it belonged to George or not, she knew that they were allowed to ride in there. The paths all ended up roughly in the same place, and they could find their way home from there later. Since it was a sunny day, the light filtered down through the trees. It glinted on a carpet of early bluebells, making it seem like a fairy tale world. It was the perfect place to go.
"Let's take the right-hand path," Rupert said. "I've never been that way before."
They set off, and as usual, Rupert chattered on while they went. Lexi had to answer a million questions about everything under the sun, but she found his curiosity endearing and didn't mind. It showed that he wasn't a dullard, as some of his governesses had tried to claim. No doubt they'd failed to inspire him to learn, she thought. Such an inquisitive boy shouldn't be difficult to teach. And she looked forward to the challenge, even if it was only for a few short weeks. They had a pleasant ride, alternating between walking and cantering with the occasional short gallop. When they were almost at the other edge of the forest, however, and could see brighter sunlight up ahead, a pheasant suddenly erupted from a nearby thicket and flew up in front of them with a squawk. Shireen shied, but Lexi didn't lose her grip and remained in the saddle, keeping the horse in check. Jefferson, however, took fright and bolted. Rupert screamed, but wasn't thrown. As his horse took off, Lexi could see that he was holding on for dear life and doing a good job of it, but she wasn't sure how long he could continue to do so. She set off in pursuit, urging Shireen into her fastest gallop. "Hang on, Rupert! I'm coming!" she shouted, not sure if he could hear her. Jefferson thundered along, clearly terrified out of his wits, and therefore much faster than normal. Although Shireen was gaining on him, she wasn't doing so as quickly as Lexi would have liked, and she tried to make the mare go faster. "Come on, Shireen! He's only a pony. You can do it, girl!" Rupert was now bouncing around dangerously on the back of his mount, and Lexi's insides clenched. She knew it was only a matter of time before he fell off, and at such speed it would be a nasty tumble, possibly even fatal. It didn't bear thinking of. She was almost sobbing with frustration and anxiety when suddenly another rider came out of nowhere and headed straight for Rupert. At the very last moment, when Lexi was sure the boy would lose his grip, the other rider grabbed him round the waist and lifted him off Jefferson. He then slowed down, with the boy safe in front of him. Lexi pulled on the reins and came to a halt next to them, her attention all for Rupert at first.
"Are you all right? Are you hurt? Rupert, I'm so sorry."
"The boy's fine, ma'am. And the horse will be too, don't fret." Lexi looked up at last to find that Rupert's rescuer was none other than Sinley. She gasped, although a part of her had known it instinctively.
"You,"
she whispered, then lowered her gaze, wishing she'd kept her mouth shut.
"Have we met?"
he inquired, and she heard puzzlement in his voice.
No, I'm sorry. I mistook you for someone else."
The lie tripped off her tongue without hesitation, and she took a deep breath to compose herself. It wasn't easy, because seeing him at such close quarters was even more of a shock to the system. He was every bit as handsome and formidable as he'd been 4 years ago, his black hair glinting in the sun, and those intensely blue eyes of his fixed on her with a slight frown. And the attraction she'd felt for him back then hadn't abated one bit. If anything, it was even stronger now. Lexi had to gather every scrap of determination she possessed in order to address him in a normal voice.
"Thank you so much for coming to our rescue. Rupert's horse was startled by a pheasant, and I'm afraid I wasn't fast enough to stop him. I do believe you may have saved his life, and we owe you a debt of gratitude."
Rupert, who had by now rallied somewhat, looked up at the man who was holding him.
"Yes, thank you, sir. That was quite frightening."
Sinley smiled at the boy and ruffled his hair.
"You're welcome. You did well to hold on for as long as you did. I'm not sure I could have done so."
Lexi sent him a grateful glance. It was very kind of him to praise Rupert's efforts, and that would no doubt go a long way towards making the child feel better about what had happened. She was sure he must be badly shaken.
"Do you think so, sir?"
Rupert asked, his little face shining now.
"Indeed I do. Shall we go and catch your wayward horse and show him who's master again?" I... Rupert hesitated, clearly not sure that he wanted to ride any more that day. You know what they say, Sinley added with another smile. If you take a tumble, you have to get right back on again, or you'll never manage it. Now, you didn't fall, but nevertheless you've had a fright, and if you don't master your horse immediately, he'll think he's won. We can't have that now, can we?
Rupert shook his head.
No, we can't.
Sinley set off towards the other side of the field, where Jefferson stood munching on grass, as docile as he normally was. They had no trouble catching hold of his bridle, and soon Rupert was back in his own saddle. Lexi followed.
There, how does that feel? Sinley asked the boy. Are you in control?
Yes, sir, I most certainly am. He won't be running off again today.
Excellent, that's the spirit. Well, I'd best be on my way, then.
He tipped his hat to them and gathered his reins in one hand.
Wait, please. Lexi held up a hand to stop him. You must let us thank you properly for your assistance. Won't you come back to the house for some luncheon, perhaps? I'm sure Rupert's parents will want to thank you as well.
He looked at her for a moment, as if he was in two minds. But then he shook his head.
I'm afraid I shall have to decline. I have pressing matters to attend to. One of my tenant farmers has had an accident, and I need to check how badly he's hurt. I may need to arrange for someone to help him out for a while.
He hesitated, then added, But perhaps we could meet up here tomorrow morning and ride together. I would welcome some company for a change.
That would be thanks enough.
Yes, of course, if that is your wish.
Would 10 o'clock suit you?
Lexi nodded.
Perfectly.
Excellent. I'll see you tomorrow, then. Goodbye.
He wheeled his horse around and set off. Lexi stared after him for some time, unable to believe that she'd actually spoken to him again, then shook herself mentally and focused on Rupert.
Are you really all right? Would you rather we walk for a while?
Rupert squared his shoulders.
No, I'm fine. The man said I was in charge, and I am.
Lexi blessed Sinley for his words. She was sure that without him, matters would have turned out very differently. Chapter 3 Sinley found the tenant farmer, Loughton, despondent due to the fact that he'd broken his leg. But he cheered up once Sinley assured him he would pay for someone to come and look after his farm until he was on the mend.
"That's mighty kind of you, your lordship. I'm much obliged to you. I did wonder as how I'd manage, and me with 6 mouths to feed and all."
"Don't concern yourself, Loughton. I will find someone reliable to help you as soon as possible. Can your wife and eldest son hold the fort until then?"
"Indeed they can. Young Matt's 10 now and strong for his age. As long as it's only for a short while."
"It will be. Don't worry."
"Well, thank you kindly, my lord, thank you. I don't mind telling you. It's a weight off my mind."
That settled, Sinley headed for home. He rode without really seeing the landscape around him. Instead, images of the young lady he'd just met kept teasing at his memory, until at last, startling his horse, he exclaimed out loud, "Of course!" He knew now where he'd seen her before. At one of the interminable balls of the last London season he'd participated in. He'd wandered off in search of some solitude, tired of the boring crowd of people. Instead, he'd found the young woman hiding in the host's orangery behind a collection of large pot plants. He'd been slightly foxed at the time. Well, 3 sheets to the wind, more like, as he'd been drowning his sorrows. But he still remembered the encounter, vividly.
"What on earth are you doing out here?" Sinley asked, upon catching sight of her sitting on a small bench. If he hadn't stumbled on a pot shard and ended up looking straight at her, he doubted he'd even have noticed her.
She was so still in the moonlight.
"Shh, please, I beg of you, don't give me away," she replied,
her lovely eyes huge and beseeching.
"I cannot bear to go back in there just yet. It is tedious beyond belief."
Without asking, he sat down next to her and studied her more closely, liking what he saw. There was no doubt about it. She was an incomparable, or a true diamond of the first water, as his friends would say. Or she would have been, had she worn a more becoming dress. The row upon row of ruffles that adorned her hid what his connoisseur's eye recognised as a very fine figure. Her eyes, at close quarters, seemed to be a clear turquoise. Her nose was small and delicately pointed, and she had a mouth that he felt sure any man would be tempted to kiss. He did so. It was an outrageous thing to do, of course, and he expected to be slapped, or worse, have her scream the place down. But she did no such thing. Instead, she blinked at him a few times, then leaned forward, inviting him to continue. He was so stunned he kissed her again. And again. After a while, she began to kiss him back, and he taught her without words how it should be done properly, deeply. She learnt fast. Finally, some semblance of sense reared up inside him and made him pull back. He dragged in a ragged breath and swore quietly.
"Devil take it. What's your name?"
"Lexi."
She was staring at him with eyes that were intoxicated with desire, and he looked away, shocked by the reciprocating sensation swirling around inside him.
"Well, Lexi, this won't do. Really, it won't."
She sighed. "I know. I'd better leave before Mama comes to find me."
She fiddled with the strings to her reticule.
"I apologize for my behavior."
He laughed, then shook his head.
"You have nothing to apologize for. It is I who should beg your pardon. That was unforgivable of me. I'm sorry."
"Are you?"
she asked, an enigmatic look in her eyes now.
"Well, I'm not. Good evening to you, my lord."
And then she stood up and left, her head held high and her steps almost without faltering. A small telltale stumble was the only sign of her agitation, but he noticed it and wanted to run after her. He wished that he could take her back into his arms and assure her that he wasn't sorry at all, quite the opposite. But then he remembered that he was no longer a free man. His betrothed was waiting in the ballroom, and he had no right to dally with anyone else. He didn't regret his bargain with Catherine, not really. But there were times when he wondered if he was doing the right thing. That night was one of them. But deep down, he knew he'd made the only choice he could in the circumstances. It was the only way he could save his estate and all the people who depended upon him. That was 4 years ago, and he was a free man again. But what respectable female would want him now, after all the gossip and rumours about him? And no one would believe him, even if he tried to explain why he'd done it. He shook his head. The lovely Lexi wasn't for him, and nor was anyone else. He was waiting for them at the edge of the forest the following day, and Lexi tried her best to school her features into some semblance of a normal expression. She couldn't possibly let on that he affected her in any way. He would think her very foolish indeed, she thought.
"Good morning, ma'am, Rupert."
He rose in the saddle and bowed to them, and Rupert copied him while Lexi inclined her head.
"I'm afraid I was very remiss yesterday in not introducing myself. I'm Jacob Brooke, Lord Synley, at your service. You can just call me Synley, young man," he added to Rupert. "That's what my friends do."
Rupert grinned, obviously pleased to be included among this man's friends.
"I'm Rupert Hawthorne,
and this here is my Aunt Lexi.
Lexi cleared her throat and sent him a meaningful glance.
I mean, Miss Holloway, he amended.
Pleased to make your acquaintance. Now, where do you wish to ride today?
Let's try some of the other paths,
Rupert said, and set off eagerly. It was obvious that he'd already forgotten the fright of the previous day's ride, and Lexi was relieved about that. He'd also refrained from making too much of the incident when he told his mother about it, which was probably just as well, or Margaret would have forbidden their rides altogether.
Very well, Sydney smiled at Lexi. We'd better follow him.
Yes, he's a very determined young man.
They rode side by side in companionable silence for a while, enjoying the birdsong, the gentle breeze, and the sight of the trees bursting forth in their spring greenery. Lexi decided then and there that no employer, however kind, would ever entice her away from England again. It was too beautiful.
A penny for your thoughts, Sindley murmured.
Lexi glanced at him and then wished she hadn't. His gaze was intense, as if he was trying to fathom the workings of her mind. She very much hoped he hadn't discerned any of her true feelings. She attempted a bright smile.
I was just thinking how lovely it is here in England in springtime. Nothing will make me leave it again for any length of time.
His eyebrows rose.
Have you been abroad then, Miss Holloway?
Yes, I've spent the last 3 years in Italy, near Naples to be precise, with the late Lady Belvedere. I was her companion. I did enjoy my time there, but I must admit I found the constant heat a bit wearing. I much prefer the cold.
That's understandable. I have travelled in Italy myself and couldn't agree more.
Li parla italiano?
Naturalmente?
She continued in Italian.
My pronunciation is no doubt atrocious to a native, but I made myself understood without too much difficulty.
He laughed. I'm sure your Italian is as perfect as the rest of you, Miss Holloway.
Lexi felt herself blush, and reverted to stammering in English.
I... thank you. You were too kind.
She decided to change the subject, not comfortable with receiving compliments.
So does your estate abut my brother-in-law's? Hawthorne Manor, I mean.
Yes, the part I acquired through my late wife. This forest is on Down's land, and if you were to continue in this direction for another mile or so, you would come to the main residence, Down's house. My ancestral estate, Sinley Priory, is another few miles further east.
He didn't seem to find this a painful subject, so Lexi dared to ask another question.
And do you reside in both houses, my lord?
He laughed, making a dimple appear in one cheek. It changed his whole demeanour from his habitual sternness and made him appear even more handsome than before, if that was possible. Lexi had to tear her gaze away from this fascinating sight.
No, Miss Holloway, I am but one man, and I think it would be a little excessive to keep two residences so close to each other. Don't you? I live at the Priory, and usually let Down's house out, although at present it's without a tenant. That's why I've been overseeing things here lately, riding the grounds to check fencing and so on.
So you have the double burden of two estates, Lexi commented.
I don't see it as a burden, but a privilege. And I enjoy watching my tenants thrive. If they're happy, then so am I, because we all profit from good harvests and growing herds of livestock.
For some reason, Lexi was pleased to hear that he cared about the land he'd acquired in such an unorthodox manner, and the people who farmed it for him. It seemed to show that he took his duties as owner seriously, and also that he had respect for his late wife.
And you, Miss Holloway, where will you live now that you're back in England? Are you making your home with Sir George and Lady Hawthorne?
God forbid, Lexi said without thinking, then felt her cheeks heat up. I mean, not that there's anything wrong with... That is to say, I'm sure it would be a lovely place to live, but I wish to make my own way in the world, and not be beholden to anyone. He quirked an eyebrow at her.
What you're trying to put politely is that you don't wish to be used as a drudge. Is that it?
She couldn't help but smile at his perspicacity. Something like that, yes. At least not without being paid for my trouble.
But since you're here anyway, they're making full use of your services.
He nodded in the direction of Rupert, who was still riding ahead of them, lost in thought for the moment.
Yes, she admitted. I am Rupert's unofficial governess for the next few weeks.
She shrugged.
I don't mind, really. He's a delightful boy. And it's my opinion he just needs a firmer hand and someone to take an interest in him. I fear my sister's ideas of child-rearing and mine do not quite tally. I believe he ought to have a kind but strong-minded tutor, but my sister won't have it. She will insist on trying to engage useless governesses for him. He's too spirited for that, and they can never keep up.
His dimple appeared once more.
If it's any consolation, I think I'm firmly on your side. I hope you succeed in persuading Lady Hawthorne that you're right. I admired my own tutor immensely as a boy, and owe him a debt of gratitude. He was a wonderful teacher, but didn't put up with any nonsense.
If only I could find someone like that for Rupert, Lexi sighed.
Perhaps I can help. I'll let you know if I hear of anyone.
Well, thank you, that would be very kind of you. They reverted to less personal topics, such as the recent weather and sights they'd both seen in Italy, and the time passed quickly. Before she knew it, they'd arrived back at Hawthorne Manor, and Sinley took off his hat to say goodbye.
"I've enjoyed our ride, Miss Holloway, Rupert."
He smiled at the boy.
"Perhaps we can do it again soon."
"Of course. Please join us any time you're free, my lord," Lexi replied. "Rupert and I have agreed to go riding every morning before lessons, so you should have no trouble finding us."
"Oh, but won't you come and watch me practice shooting before you go, Sinley? Please? Aunt Lexi bought me the most capital rifle, and I'm making great progress already, aren't I?"
"Well, I—" Sinley hesitated.
"Really, Rupert, I'm sure his lordship has important estate matters to attend to," Lexi put in. She felt they'd already taken up too much of Sinley's time as it was, and she was sure he could have no interest in a little boy's shooting prowess.
"Should you not ask your father to watch?" Sinley said.
Rupert shook his head.
"Already did, but he's busy."
He looked a bit crestfallen, and Lexi felt for him. George never seemed to spend any time with his son, and she couldn't understand it. But then her brother-in-law seldom rose before noon, and usually with a sore head and an even worse temper.
"Very well, then. Let's see what you can do. But I can't stay long, mind," Sinley surprised her by saying. Her eyes flew to his.
"Are you sure, my lord? Perhaps another day?"
"No. My other plans can wait half an hour."
He smiled at Rupert, whose face had lit up at his words.
"Where do you practice?"
"Over in the field, behind the stables. I'll fetch my rifle."
They tethered their horses at the edge of the field, and Rupert ran off as quickly as his little legs would allow. Lexi walked over to a tree some 30 yards away to set up the target, her figure made out of straw, with a white apron tied around his middle. On the apron, they'd painted concentric circles, and Rupert's task was to hit the middle one. When she returned to Sinley, Rupert was already back with his rifle and ammunition.
"But where's your mentor?" Sinley asked. "Should he not be present?"
"Huh?" Rupert looked up with a frown of concentration from loading his rifle.
"Oh, she's already here."
He pointed at Lexi.
"My aunt is teaching me."
Sinley raised his eyebrows at her, and Lexi felt her cheeks heat up once more.
"My father taught me," she said. "He thought it a good idea at the time."
"Indeed. And why not?" Sinley replied.
Rupert excelled himself and managed to hit the target several times. When Sinley praised his efforts, he positively beamed
and Lexi could have hugged his lordship for being so kind to the boy. It was exactly what Rupert needed. She was about to thank him when a new voice rang out from behind them.
"And what's going on here, then? Target practice? No one told me."
Lexi and Cynli turned as one and faced Jasper Torrington, who came sauntering across the grass. As usual, he was dressed in a manner more suited to a London drawing room than the countryside. Lexi couldn't help but contrast his attire with the more practical clothing worn by Cynli. Somehow the latter looked far more manly, at least to her mind.
"Torrington?"
Cynli gave the man a curt nod, but there was no warmth in his expression, Lexi noted.
"We're just watching Rupert," Lexi said. "He wanted to show off his skills."
"So I see."
Jasper eyed Cynli with a speculative glance.
"Didn't know you were acquainted with George's son."
"We met yesterday by accident. He's a delightful child, and I enjoy his company."
"Really?"
Jasper looked as if such a thing was unfathomable to him. But then he barely even noticed Rupert, as Lexi well knew. Cynli ignored Jasper and turned back to Rupert.
"Well done again, young man. Keep at it, and you'll be the best shot in the county soon. Now, if you'll excuse me, I'd best be off."
He bowed to him and Lexi, then gave Jasper another curt nod.
"Your servant."
Lexi and Rupert untied their horses and walked them to the stable yard. Jasper followed them and lounged against an open door, watching while they handed their mounts over to a groom. Then he fell into step beside Lexi on the way back to the house, while Rupert skipped on ahead.
"Careful with the rifle," Lexi called after the boy.
But she knew it wasn't loaded, so she wasn't too worried.
"I thought you said you weren't acquainted with Cynli," Jasper said. "And yet, it would appear you and the boy went riding with him before the little shooting lesson."
Lexi frowned at him.
"Like he said, we met for the first time yesterday. He helped us catch Rupert's horse when it bolted. Naturally, after being of such assistance, I couldn't refuse to let him ride with us today."
Not that it was any of Jasper's business, she thought to herself.
"Is that so?"
He didn't sound as though he believed her, but Lexi didn't care. It was the truth, after all, apart from the bit about never having met the man before.
"He didn't look like he had any pressing estate matters to attend to today. Perhaps he'd be up for a game of cards with me and George later."
Lexi resented the insinuation implied in Jasper's words, but decided there was no point rising to the bait.
"As to that, I have no idea," she replied airily. "You'd have to ask him. I assume he was merely being polite to Rupert and myself. Now, if you'll excuse us, we have lessons to do."
She swept her little nephew up the stairs without another glance, but inside she was seething. What did it matter to Jasper Torrington whether she was on friendly terms with Cynli or not? It was nothing to do with him. And yet, something in his eyes had made her suspect that he was making it his business. But she had no idea why. Chapter 4.
"Where have you been hiding yourself, you naughty man? I haven't seen you in an age."
Emma, Lady Ketteridge, leaned over and put her hand on Cynli's arm in a playful manner. But this made his horse nervous, and it stepped to the side, pulling him out of her reach. Cynli couldn't say that he minded. Emma was the acknowledged beauty in these parts, and she'd been throwing him increasingly broad hints as to how friendly she wished them to be. So far, he had managed to ignore her. But she was nothing if not tenacious.
"Oh, I have a lot to do on the estate," he told her. "Never a dull moment, you know, and there's always something new that crops up."
"So much so that you can't make time even for me?"
Her long eyelashes swept down flirtatiously, while she pouted in what she no doubt thought was an irresistible manner. Although Sinley had been tempted to avail himself of her unspoken offer once or twice during the past year through sheer loneliness, he now found that the sight of her left him cold. He was glad he hadn't given in. Instead, another face rose up in his mind's eye, one which was far lovelier and without guile. "If I had time for socialising, believe me, I would," he said curtly.
"Well, what about joining us for my little card party tomorrow night? You did receive the invitation, I trust, and surely you can't be working every evening?"
Sinley wanted to refuse, but he was tired of having to make up excuses. Besides, he would have to face his neighbours at some point eventually, and now was as good a time as any. "Very well, then, I shall look forward to it. Now, if you'll excuse me, I really must be going. Good day to you, my lady." He caught a flash of triumph in her dark eyes, but ignored it and set off in the direction of Hawthorne Manor. For the last week, he joined Rupert and Miss Holloway, or Lexi, as he thought of her privately, for their morning ride every second day. He hadn't dared come every day, or someone might start to comment. But neither could he keep away entirely. The more he spoke to Lexi, the more he realised how unusual she was. Far from being an empty-headed ninny, like a lot of young women were, he'd found her to possess a sharp brain and sensible views on a range of subjects. She wasn't afraid to speak her mind, and neither was she missish in any way. He'd been genuinely surprised that she was the one teaching Rupert to shoot, rather than a male of the household. It seemed a strange skill for a female to possess. And yet, it didn't make her any less feminine. Nothing could do that. She had the most tantalizing curves, and a mouth that invited kisses. As he well remembered, although he tried his best not to think about that moment of madness all those years ago, every time he did, he was tempted to kiss her again. He couldn't help wishing it was the following day, so that he could see her now, this minute. Today he ought to stay away, but he urged his horse in the direction of Hawthorne nevertheless. He drew rein and ground his teeth. He really should turn back and go and check on a ditch which his steward had reported was blocked. But it seemed a boring prospect compared to time spent with Lexi. "Damnation," he muttered, when a little devil inside him prodded him to continue. "Oh, just this once, then. What harm could it do after all? He'd stay at home tomorrow instead."
"I'm sorry, Aunt Lexi, but I can't go on a ride today. Mama says I'm to be fitted for a new coat and breeches."
A sulky-looking Rupert informed Lexi after breakfast. "It will take forever. It did last time."
"Oh, that's a shame. Shall we go later, then?"
"No. You go ahead. I wouldn't want to spoil your day, too." Lexi hid a smile, but was impressed that the boy could think in such unselfish terms.
"Well, that's very kind of you, but I don't mind. I can wait."
"No, really, you'd better go. Otherwise, if Sinley is waiting for us, he won't know where we are."
Lexi bit her lip. "I doubt he'll be there today. We saw him only yesterday. But if you insist, I'll have a short ride just to make sure. I'll see you later."
She wished that they hadn't seen his lordship the day before, because she would have loved to ride with him alone, but of course such a thing was not permitted. I shouldn't even be thinking such things. She would have had to bring a groom in any case. But since she wasn't likely to see him, she elected to go out by herself. "I'll stay on Hawthorne land," she informed the groom, "so I'll be perfectly safe." It wasn't long before she strayed into the forest, however. And, to her surprise, there was Sinley, waiting at their usual meeting point.
"My lord, I hadn't thought to find you here today.
She reined in, some yards away from him, aware of the impropriety.
"I can see that."
He raised his eyebrows at her.
"No groom? And no Rupert? Is that safe?"
"Rupert couldn't come today. And as for a groom, well, to tell you the truth, I can't bear to have someone trail along like that. It quite spoils my enjoyment of the ride."
"Perhaps I should leave you to it, then?"
he asked, a quizzical look in his eyes. Lexi shook her head. "No, please, I didn't mean you. I would welcome your company." She felt herself blush for being so forward, but he made no comment, just set his horse in motion. They set off along the path, and Lexi battled with her conscience for a while, before deciding that really she was too old to worry about being chaperoned. She was practically on the shelf. And what harm could it do to ride with a neighbour so close to her brother-in-law's house? None, surely.
"You are very quiet, Lexi," he said after a lengthy silence.
Her eyes flew to his, startled by his use of her Christian name.
"Really, you shouldn't call me that," she protested. "It's not seemly."
He smiled.
"Ah, but it's what you told me your name was the first time we met. Or have you forgotten?"
Lexi pulled on the reins and came to a halt. She stared at him and felt the blood drain from her face before returning with a vengeance.
I... You remember?"
His gaze rested on her mouth for a moment, making her cheeks heat up even further.
"Did you really think I wouldn't? I wasn't as foxed as all that, you know."
His voice was soft, almost a caress. And Lexi felt a yearning well up inside her, so strong it frightened her. She closed her eyes.
"Dear God," she muttered.
In the next instant, she felt his fingers brush her cheek.
"Don't worry," he said. "I won't tell a soul. It shall be our secret. But don't ask me to forget what happened, because you were wrong. I wasn't sorry either."
Lexi dared to look up into his eyes, which held an expression she couldn't quite understand. She shivered. He was so close, so altogether perfect, so not for her. He was a rich lord, and she was a nobody without a dowry. What interest could he possibly have in someone like her? None. She was just trying to gather her wits to reply in a sensible fashion when a shot rang out. Something whistled past her cheek, and she heard Sinley gasp while his fingers were jerked away from her.
"What the devil? Ride, Lexi, quickly, get out of here."
He slapped Shireen's rump, and the startled mare took off so fast Lexi almost lost her seat. Through the trees she thought she glimpsed a flash of yellow, then she and the horse were flying along the path, closely followed by Sinley. They rode hell for leather until they reached the open field near Hawthorne Manor. Only then did they come to a halt, with Sinley's horse dancing around in circles before coming to a full stop.
"What happened? Oh, my God, you're hurt!"
Lexi exclaimed, catching sight of a dark stain that was rapidly spreading across Sinley's shoulder. He reached up to touch it and winced.
"A mere scratch," he said, gazing all around them with narrowed eyes, checking that they were safe. "I'll have it seen to when I get home."
"No, please. Come to Hawthorne and let me have a look at it. It's closer. Honestly, you could bleed to death otherwise."
She sent him a pleading glance, terrified for him, although she didn't yet understand how he had come to be shot.
"Very well, as you wish."
They set off towards the manor.
"Was someone out hunting, do you think? And missed?"
Lexi was still trying to puzzle it out. Sinley's mouth became a grim line.
"I doubt it. That was too close a call, and I think it was aimed at one or other of us deliberately."
"But why?"
He shrugged.
I've no idea, but I would hazard a guess I was the target. I doubt you have any enemies, whereas there are plenty of people who don't think very highly of me.
That's absurd. Why would anyone try to kill you merely because you contracted an unorthodox marriage? And one which is, moreover, at an end. That doesn't make sense.
She didn't dare ask if he'd done anything else that might cause someone to hate him so much they wanted him dead.
Maybe not.
A shuttered expression came over his eyes. Perhaps you're right, and it was merely someone who's a very bad shot. I shall have the matter investigated, never fear. Now, here we are. Are you sure you want to do this? It will no doubt be messy.
I'm not squeamish, and I've seen to wounds before. Follow me, my lord. They left the horses with a groom who came running at their bidding, and Lexi led the way into the house. Fortunately, there was no one about, and she directed Sidney to the morning room at the back of the house while she went in search of clean bandages and hot water. She returned to find him naked to the waist, a sight which stopped her in her tracks for a moment before she forced her legs to move again. He had the magnificent physique of one of the many statues she'd seen in Italy, but unlike them, he wasn't made of marble. Perfectly formed muscles stretched the skin of his shoulders, chest, and arms, and she longed to touch him, to trace the contours of those muscles with her fingertips. She swallowed hard. A lady shouldn't even think of such things. But then again, most ladies hadn't seen Lord Sinley half-naked. It was going to be extremely hard to concentrate on the task in hand. A maid followed her into the room, carrying a bowl and a pitcher of boiling hot water. "Please stay, Mary," Lexi told the girl. "You needn't look, just have a seat over there." "Yes, miss."
Sinley glanced up and gave her a brief smile, as if acknowledging the wisdom of having a chaperone present. Then he shrugged and said, "It's a mere scratch, as I said, but it seems to be bleeding a lot."
"I'd say."
Lexi dipped a cloth in the hot water and began to clean the wound. There was what seemed like a great quantity of blood, but the bullet had only grazed his shoulder. Although it had left a deep groove, he was right, and it wasn't as bad as she had feared.
"You were lucky, my lord," she murmured. "A little bit lower, and it would have stuck."
"Yes, thank the Lord, whoever it was, must be a very bad shot. I don't much fancy having a surgeon poke around inside me for a bullet."
He smiled again, and she gazed into his eyes, wondering how he could joke about this. Someone might be wanting him dead. And that thought made her insides turn to ice.
"You must be careful from now on," she murmured. "Don't ride out alone, I beg you."
"You care about my safety,"
he whispered, so quietly the maid couldn't hear him. His blue eyes fixed on hers with the same quizzical look he'd given her earlier during the ride.
"Yes. Yes, of course I do."
Lexi felt her cheeks turn hot and busied herself with bandaging his shoulder.
"I mean, as I would that of any fellow human being," she added.
"Ah, naturally."
There was a teasing note in his voice, which told her that he didn't quite believe her, but she pretended not to hear that. When she'd finished her ministrations, he put his shirt back on and Lexi drew a sigh of relief. Having him in a state of undress so close to her had been very unsettling, to say the least. It was one thing to see the male form rendered in marble, but quite another in real flesh and blood.
"I thank you for your assistance, Miss Holloway," he said. "You have saved me from the clumsy efforts of my housekeeper, who means well, but has no idea how to tie a bandage."
"It was nothing, my lord. Do please come back if it needs changing. I've applied some wound powder, and trust that will help, but you should probably have it seen to in a day or two."
He shrugged into his coat with a small grimace of pain, and Lexi walked him to the door. There he stopped briefly and whispered,
"Please, don't ride out alone again yourself until I've had time to investigate this matter. Will you promise me that?"
She nodded.
If you think that's best.
I do. I'll let you know when it's safe again. After a brief nod and aloud, "Thank you again, Miss Holloway," no doubt for the benefit of their audience, he took his leave.
"Lexi, my dear, we've been invited to the Kettridges for supper and cards tomorrow. Will you accompany us? You and Jasper are both included on the invitation."
Margaret caught Lexi on the stairs, just as she was on her way up to change out of her now stained riding habit.
"If you wish. Who are the Kettridges?" "Sir Harry and his wife Emma. We've known them an age. He's a bit old and dodgy, but Emma's a great hostess. Never a dull moment when we're there. It should be vastly entertaining."
"Very well. I shall look forward to it." Lexi thought to herself that it would be preferable to staying at Hawthorne, where Jasper seemed to have taken permanent root. He was supposed to have stayed for a few days only, according to Margaret, but so far he showed no signs of leaving, and he and George were as thick as thieves. They'd been out late every night, gaming in some nearby tavern, apparently. But before they left, Lexi had to endure their boorish conversation at dinner, not to mention Jasper's leering glances. When she came down the stairs later, Jasper was unfortunately the first thing she set eyes on. He was lounging in the hall, leaning a shoulder against the door leading into the library, and he smiled when he caught sight of her.
"Ah, Miss Holloway, I hear you've had a busy morning."
"What do you mean?" Lexi sighed inwardly. No doubt the servants had gossiped, and it was too much to expect that they would keep Sinley's visit a secret.
"I was told you had to use your healing skills on none other than Lord Sinley. What happened?"
"Oh, it was just a scratch. I came across him at the edge of the park, and he'd had a run-in with a poacher or some such. I thought it best if he came to Hawthorne to have his wounds seen to, in case it was worse than it looked. I have some skill in such matters."
"And was it?"
"No, as I said, it was nothing, really."
"Well, I'm glad to hear that. We wouldn't want to lose our illustrious neighbour now, would we?"
Lexi gritted her teeth. She wanted to tell him that Sinley wasn't his neighbour at all, and it was none of his business. But because Jasper was George's nephew, she couldn't be rude to him.
"No, indeed,"
was all she said in the end. Chapter 5 The Kettridges lived in a neat little Queen Anne house on the edge of the next village, and Lexi could see it had been done up in the latest style. It was immediately apparent that Lady Kettridge had her husband wrapped around her little finger, and Lexi was sure the decor was all her doing.
"This is beautiful, my lady," she told their hostess, although in truth she thought it was all a bit overwhelming. There were cushions and knick-knacks on every surface, and a profusion of bright colours that didn't quite match. It was as if an over-exuberant child had been let loose with a set of paints.
"Why, thank you, Miss Holloway. I had a decorator come up from London to advise me. Mr. Ashdown's all the rage, you know."
Lexi didn't doubt it, but wondered how many other people had been persuaded to adopt this lavish style against their better judgment. Fashion was a strange thing.
"Ah, there you are, Sinley. I didn't think you would make it."
Their hostess left Lexi without so much as a glance and headed for the latest arrival. Lexi stiffened and turned slowly to see if it really was him. She hadn't expected him to attend, since Jasper and George had been so adamant that their neighbour never socialised. He seemed to be on remarkably good terms with Lady Kettridge, however. She was hanging on to his arm and smiling up at him in what Lexi could only term a flirtatious manner, and he smiled back and put a hand over hers. A stab of jealousy shot through Lexi, but she pulled herself together. "He's still not yours and never will be, so don't be so silly." She would have liked to ask him how his shoulder was faring,
but couldn't find an opportune moment. His appearance at the party caused quite a stir, and although not everyone seemed pleased to see him, there were plenty of others who welcomed him. Lexi glanced at him from time to time to see whether his wound was bothering him, but he gave no sign of it, so she had to be content with that. Dinner was a jolly affair, with much banter and laughter, and afterwards there were card tables waiting in the salon.
"Do please be my partner at whist, Miss Holloway," Jasper begged.
And Lexi couldn't think of a polite way to decline. She was forced to spend the rest of the evening with him, looking at her across the table, even though she would much rather have watched Sinley. He, in turn, was monopolised throughout by Lady Kettridge, who was akin to a leech, in Lexi's opinion. George was happy, however, since he finally had his chance to win some money off Sinley. Lexi felt her spirits sink lower and lower as the evening progressed, and a headache began to build behind her eyes. She tried to ignore it, but finally she could stand it no more.
"If you will excuse me, I fear I must ask Margaret to take me home," she said to the other card players at her table. "I don't feel well. A migraine, I believe."
Margaret, however, was having a wonderful time and wasn't ready to leave yet.
"Just take the carriage, dear, and ask the coachman to return for us. You don't mind, do you?"
Lexi frowned, wondering if it wasn't improper for her to travel alone, but then the pounding in her head persuaded her that she didn't care.
"Very well. Good night, then."
She made her farewells to Lady Kettridge, who barely noticed. Lexi felt Sinley's gaze on her, but avoided looking at him. It was with relief that she sank into the soft seat of the carriage and closed her eyes. Approximately halfway back to Hawthorne Manor, Lexi was startled into full awareness by a pistol shot.
"Stand and deliver!"
she heard someone shout, at the same time as the carriage came to a halt.
"What on earth?"
she muttered. She hadn't realised there were highwaymen in these parts. It was such a small country lane, after all. Surely there would be richer pickings on the main roads. She glanced out the window and saw that there was indeed a man on horseback aiming a pistol at the coachman. This didn't frighten her. It merely made her angry. She was wearing a necklace she'd inherited from her mother, and it was the only piece of jewellery she owned which was actually worth anything. "I am not parting with it," she muttered, undoing the clasp and slipping it under the seat cushion for the moment. She knew George kept a pair of pistols somewhere in the carriage for just this sort of eventuality, and she began to root around in the various pockets until she came across them. They were both loaded, and she cocked one, taking careful aim out the window. She didn't want to kill anyone, so she focused on a tree branch just to the left of the highwayman's head, then pulled the trigger. The man jumped, startling his horse, which began to rear up.
"Leave now! I won't miss with the next one!" she shouted.
At the same time, a shot rang out from behind the highwayman as well, and he swivelled round, clearly confused. Another horseman appeared round a bend in the road, and the highwayman took off. He must have known he was outnumbered on this occasion, Lexi thought, and he did the only thing he could, retreat. The second horseman gave chase, however, and thundered after him past the carriage. Lexi didn't have time to see who it was, but stayed where she was, grasping the second pistol just in case the highwayman decided to return.
"Are you hurt, miss?"
the coachman called out, his voice quivering.
"No, Ogden, I'm fine, thank you. And you?"
"Not a scratch, miss. Just had a fright, is all. We'd best continue with all speed."
Lexi was about to agree, but again caught the sound of hoofbeats approaching.
"No, wait. Someone's coming."
The second horseman returned and jumped off his horse, landing just outside the carriage door.
"Lexi, are you all right?"
Sinley peered in through the open window.
"My lord, I thought you were busy playing cards."
"No, I tired of it soon after you left." He smiled. "May I ride with you as far as Hawthorne? I'll tie my horse to the back of the carriage."
"If you wish."
Soon after, he jumped in and joined her on the back seat, taking both her hands between his in the darkness.
You're certain the highwayman didn't harm you? I'm sorry I couldn't catch him, but he disappeared into the forest.
No, on the contrary, I almost shot him.
Ah, so that was you, was it? I wasn't sure who'd fired on whom.
He chuckled.
I should have known a mere highwayman was no match for you.
Lexi knew she ought to pull her hands away, but it felt so wonderful to have them held thus. She left them where they were. I must own I didn't know there were any hereabouts. No one told me.
Well, that's probably because there aren't. I don't believe that was a real highwayman at all. It was just someone out to frighten you.
What?
She looked up, but couldn't see his expression.
Why? I mean, do you think it was connected to what happened yesterday?
Possibly.
Then it was I who was the intended target.
No, I don't believe so. But it's a strange coincidence, nonetheless. We'll both have to be on our guard and never go anywhere alone from now on. Do you agree?
Absolutely. How is your shoulder?
Much better, no doubt thanks to you. She heard the smile in his voice. Speaking of which, I wanted to thank you properly for your assistance.
Oh, but you already did.
Not like this.
Before Lexi could protest, he had bent down to capture her mouth with his. A part of her had been wishing he would do just that, since the dark interior of the carriage was the perfect place. But she was still shocked when it happened, because she knew he shouldn't. It didn't take long for her lips to remember his lesson of all those years ago, however, and soon she forgot everything except how wonderful it felt to be kissed by him. It was as if time had stood still, and she was back in that orangery once more, falling in love with a stranger all over again. Only he wasn't a stranger this time. He pulled her closer, his hands stroking her back and running through her hair, which had come loose from its elaborate arrangement. In return, she allowed her fingers to skim his broad shoulders and felt the muscles underneath that she'd seen at such close quarters only the day before. They were as hard as she'd imagined, his skin warm through his coat. She breathed in his scent, something exotic and exciting, and felt the blood fizz through her veins. The carriage drew to a halt, and they sprang apart, their breathing somewhat ragged. She wanted to tell him off for taking liberties, but she couldn't bring herself to say the words. They would have been lies in any case, because she'd enjoyed the experience immensely. He must have done as well, since he whispered, "I'm not sorry this time either, Lexi. Good night." And with that, he jumped down and held out a hand to help her descend. She took it, her own shaking in his steady grip. But she managed to hold her head high and just say, "Good night, my lord. Thank you for your company." What else could she say after all? There were servants present.
"How are you feeling this morning? I do hope you're not coming down with anything. I wouldn't want Rupert to catch an illness."
Lexi looked up from her luncheon and watched her sister trail into the room. There were dark shadows under Margaret's eyes and a slight frown marring her brow. Of course, it was natural for a mother to think first and foremost of her child, but the implied suggestion that Lexi would be responsible should Rupert fall ill annoyed her.
"I'm perfectly well, thank you. It was only a headache. Lady Kettridge's salon was so stuffy." "Do you think so? I didn't suffer in the slightest. But then George and I were on a winning streak."
Margaret smiled at the memory of their triumph.
"We won 50 guineas off Lord Sinley. It was no wonder he left so abruptly."
She laughed.
"Well, that should please George, then," Lexi commented. "Oh, indeed. But now he thinks Lady Luck's on his side and he wants to take advantage of it. He's asked me to organise a small soiree here at the end of the week,
and is hoping Sinley will agree to play some more. Such short notice, of course. But with your help, I'm sure I can manage it. You don't mind, do you?
Lexi thought privately that it wouldn't matter whether she did. No doubt she'd be expected to help in any case, as long as she was dependent on George and Margaret for her board and lodging. She sincerely hoped she could find another post as a lady's companion soon, as she didn't want to be used in this way by her relatives for the rest of her life. There were times when she wondered if perhaps she should have accepted one of the marriage proposals she'd received after all. But she'd always been headstrong, and knew in her heart she could never be the sort of wife a man expected in a marriage of convenience. She'd watched her parents through the years, and many of their acquaintance, and decided such a life was not for her. She would rather live in penury. She quelled a sigh now, and replied to her sister, "No, what would you have me do?"
"If you could write the invitations, that would be splendid. Here's a list of the guests and the exact wording you should use. I prepared it earlier."
Margaret pulled a folded piece of paper out of her skirt pocket.
"You'll find everything else you need in the escritoire in the morning room."
"Very well, I'll see to it straight away, as Rupert's persuaded Melton to help him practice shooting."
"Thank you, I knew you would. You're frightfully efficient."
Margaret laughed once more and sat down to pick at her lunch, while Lexi stood up and headed for the door. Just before she reached it, Margaret added,
"Oh, and do write a little personal note to Lord Sinley, won't you? Something to make him attend for sure."
"Like what?" "Do please come and don't forget to kiss me again." Lexi tamped down on that thought. No doubt he was regretting it after all, since he hadn't appeared for their ride that morning. She couldn't blame him. It should never have happened, and her response... well, she didn't even want to think about that. He must think her incredibly forward.
We would be especially pleased to welcome you to Hawthorne, now that you're honouring your neighbours with your presence once more. Or words to that effect."
Margaret waved a hand, as if she didn't much care what Lexi wrote, as long as Sinley came.
"I'll see what I can do."
Sinley stared with a frown at the invitation he'd just received. He should have known that going to Emma's card party would bring on a flood of such trivial entertainments, and now he'd have the devil's own time rejecting them all. Well, not all, perhaps. He'd have to venture out occasionally, but not every week, and not to socialise with toads like George Hawthorne and his abominable nephew. Torrington. Now there was a man Sinley could well do without ever seeing again, but he seemed to have taken up permanent residence in the neighbourhood. One was forever tripping over him. And if rumour was to be believed, he was becoming very friendly with Emma. Sinley had seen no sign of it the night before, but in a way he hoped it was true. That might rid him of two problems at once. He sighed and threw the invitation onto his desk. "I am deluding myself." The main problem with attending a party at Hawthorne would be seeing Lexi again, which would not be wise. Last night he'd behaved badly and taken advantage of her vulnerability after the bogus highwayman's attempt to frighten her. Not that she'd seemed scared, quite the opposite. But she had been alone and in need of protection, and instead he had... damn it all! He stood up and began to pace the room. He had long ago decided to abandon his roguish ways and become respectable and responsible. Marrying Catherine had been the first step. Restoring the ancestral estate his father had ruined was the next. He'd been a wastrel too, just like his sire. But unlike him, Sinley had realised he had a choice. He'd also appreciated the fact that he had a duty towards others. It wasn't all about him and his wishes. There were people, adults and children, depending on him. He could only be thankful he'd come to his senses in time. The restoration of his estate had come at a price, though. Ostracism. Local society was beginning to forgive him now that Catherine had been gone for 2 years. But people had long memories, and he knew they wouldn't forget entirely. It was a price he'd been willing to pay until he met Lexi again. Would it really be so bad, throwing caution to the wind and asking her to marry him? She wasn't averse to him, that was for certain. And since she wasn't well off, she might welcome the security of a man of means. But could he really expect a respectable woman like her to put herself beyond the pale by marrying such a notorious character as himself? He never went to London any more. He barely socialized here, and he had no wish to change that. It was not the kind of life a woman wanted. No, he'd have to be strong and resist temptation. Soon she would be gone, and he would regain his peace of mind, such as it was. It was for the best, wasn't it?
"Has his lordship replied yet?"
Margaret came barging into the schoolroom 2 days later without so much as a knock, interrupting Lexi in mid-sentence.
"Who?"
She knew very well to whom Margaret was referring, but didn't want this to be obvious.
"Sindley, of course. Who else? I swear he's the most vexatious man on earth."
"No, he's not, Mama."
Rupert piped up, scowling at his mother.
"He's a capital fellow, and he's my friend."
"Is he really? Well, perhaps I should have asked you to invite him instead, then, since he doesn't seem inclined to come at my bidding."
Margaret pursed her lips, looking very much like her son when he was in a sulk.
"He might be otherwise engaged," Lexi suggested.
"Then he should say so. It's such bad manners not even replying. You did add a special note for him, did you not?"
"To be sure."
Lexi crossed her fingers behind her back. She hadn't seen any point in doing so, since she knew very well Sindley would do as he pleased, note or no note.
"You must ride over and ask him."
"What? I can't do that. It would be most improper, Margaret." Lexi frowned at her sister, wondering if she'd taken leave of her senses.
"Honestly, George will have to fleece someone else."
"But he set his heart on Sindley, and no one else will play for such high stakes. They know George too well. I tell you what, why don't you two go riding now and see if you come across him? He may be out and about, if he's as diligent regarding estate matters as George claims."
"We're in the middle of a maths lesson."
Lexi glared at her sister.
"Well, that can wait, surely. Dear Rupert hates doing sums, don't you, darling?"
"No, actually, I'm rather..."
Margaret cut her son off.
"Of course you do. Who doesn't? Now run along and change, dearest. You too, Lexi, please. There's no harm in trying, is there?"
Lexi threw up her hands in surrender.
"Oh, very well, but if we don't meet him, I'm not chasing after him. Is that clear?"
"No, no, of course not,"
Margaret smiled.
"Thank you. I knew I could count on you."
Lexi wanted to hurl one of the books at her sister's retreating back, but she restrained herself with some difficulty.
"There he is. I say, Sindley! Over here, Sindley!"
Rupert stood up in the saddle and took off his hat to wave in the direction of a rider on the far side of a field they were passing. Lexi said something very unladylike in Italian under her breath.
"For heaven's sake, Rupert, do sit down. You'll spook Jefferson again."
It was too late, however. His lordship had seen them and came cantering over, smiling at Rupert and bowing to Lexi.
"Good afternoon. Have you taken to riding at all hours now? I know lessons are boring, but really..." he teased.
Lexi felt herself flush, but tried to remain calm.
"The maths proved particularly difficult today, so we needed a diversion," she replied.
"I see. Then perhaps I may ride with you for a bit."
Lexi glanced at him, but could see no obvious reluctance on his part. Since he hadn't joined them for their rides all week, she had thought he didn't want their company any more. But he looked at ease now, and spoke in his usual manner to Rupert. If she detected a slight hesitation in his demeanour when he addressed her, it was barely noticeable, and she told herself she might be imagining it. Since they hadn't seen Sinley for so long, Rupert had a lot to tell him, and Lexie let the two of them ride ahead of her. Sinley allowed the boy to prattle on and made all the right responses, until at last Rupert ran out of both breath and things to talk about. "And that's all," he ended with a smile, which Sinley returned.
"Really? It sounds to me like you've had a very busy week. Your poor aunt must be hard put to keep up with you."
He glanced over his shoulder at Lexie.
"No. Aunt Lexie is never tired, are you, aunt?"
"Of course not," Lexie replied with a laugh. But she could see that Sinley didn't believe her. He just shook his head with a smile, however.
"Why don't you ride ahead so I may have a word with her?" he suggested.
And Rupert set off at a slightly faster pace, leaving Sinley to draw up next to Lexie.
"He's a handful and no mistake," he said, looking after Rupert.
"Yes, he's hard work sometimes, but rewarding company nevertheless. I'm enjoying my time with him, and he's coming on very well in his lessons. He surprises me daily."
"I'm glad you're not finding it too onerous. I still feel you're being used. But I'm sure you're capable of saying no when the occasion warrants it."
"Indeed. Never fear."
Lexie took a deep breath. His smiling eyes seemed to indicate he wasn't just talking about Rupert. Had he expected her to say no to his kisses? And was he disgusted that she hadn't done so? This thought made her cheeks heat up and she decided to change the subject. She was just about to broach the subject of the party, but Sinley forestalled her in his usual direct manner.
"I take it you didn't come to find me just for Rupert to tell me about his week."
Lexie glanced up at him, startled.
"Well, not exactly, no."
He sighed. "So, you must have been sent to inquire whether I'm coming to your sister's infernal party."
Lexie smiled. "You are correct, but can I just say that I'm here under duress? I assume that if you hadn't replied, you weren't planning to attend, which is, of course, your prerogative."
"Do you want me to come?"
His question took her by surprise.
"Me personally?"
He nodded.
"Well, of course I'd like it if you did, but more to the point, you would save me from days of other people's grumbling and sulking."
He laughed. "That bad, is it? Tell me, is it your brother-in-law who's desperate for my company at the card tables, or your sister who wants the cachet of my presence at her table?"
"Both, I should think, although mostly the former."
Lexie saw no reason not to tell him the truth. He'd obviously figured it out for himself in any case.
"Thought so. Very well, if it will make things easier for you, I'll come, but on one condition."
"And what's that?"
"You partner me at whist this time. If I have to listen to Emma screeching another whole evening, I shall likely end up in bedlam."
It was Lexie's turn to laugh. "That would be too bad. To be honest, though, I don't think I can afford to play with you and George. He's hoping for high stakes."
"Don't worry about that. I'll bank you, and what's more, I'll guarantee to lose to keep everyone happy. Please feel free to cheat if you see the opportunity."
"Really, my lord, I don't think that will be necessary."
"Trust me, it is. Your brother-in-law is one of the worst card players I've ever encountered, and I'm surprised he wins anything at all."
Lexie shook her head at him.
"I'm astonished at you, my lord. If I were you, I'd stay away in that case. I'd never throw my money away on the likes of George."
"Ah, but I'm doing it for you, remember?"
He grinned at her and nudged his horse into a canter.
"Now come on, let's stop dawdling."
Chapter 6 Lexi had told Margaret that on no account must she allow Lady Kettridge to partner Lord Sinley at the card tables, or else he'd never grace their home with his presence again. Her sister had taken this to heart, and went so far as to seat him next to Lexi at the dinner table as well, which went against all the rules of etiquette, and made him raise an eyebrow at her. "This is a bonus," he whispered. "I'm usually always stuck with some dowager or other, on account of being an earl. A dashed nuisance, let me tell you."
"You may tire of my company just as easily," Lexi answered, intending it as a joke.
But he replied with fervour, "Never." She blinked at him, but was prevented from speaking just then, since the soup was being served.
"So have you arranged matters for later on, as we discussed?" he asked her, sotto voce.
"Well, I've made sure you won't be partnered by Lady Kettridge at any rate, but I cannot guarantee it will be me."
"And we'll see about that," he said with a smile. "I can be very determined when I want something."
"So can I."
He shot her a glance of surprise.
"Tell me more. What is it you want, Lexi?"
I didn't mean anything specific. Not at present. I just meant I can be very stubborn on occasion."
"Then let us say that you wanted something you knew you shouldn't have. Would you still try to obtain it?"
"My lord?" Lexley wasn't sure if he was referring to anything in particular and didn't know how to answer.
"I mean, if you wished to do something, despite the fact that you knew it was wrong, would you do it anyway?"
His blue gaze was disconcertingly close, and Lexi had trouble thinking. She concentrated on her soup and tried to answer truthfully.
"That would depend on how bad it was, I suppose. I doubt I'd do anything that was against the law. But if it was merely something that society dictated I shouldn't do, then I'd probably do it regardless. I don't give a fig for silly rules made up by matchmaking matrons with nothing better to do."
I thought so."
He sighed.
"Thank you. You've given me food for thought."
"I don't understand."
She looked into his eyes once more, but couldn't read anything in their depths. He put his hand over hers for a moment, under the cover of her napkin.
"Never mind. I'll explain some other time."
The rest of the meal passed in general conversation with those around them, but Lexi couldn't stop thinking about his words. What had he meant? What was it he wanted to do that he shouldn't? For there had been no doubt in her mind that he'd been speaking about himself. Sinley wanted to kick himself. First of all, he shouldn't have succumbed and agreed to come to this dinner party. And second, he should learn to keep his mouth shut around Lexi. She was too sharp for her own good. And now he'd as much as told her that he was thinking of doing something he ought not to. Devil take it. He could only hope she wasn't astute enough to puzzle it out, because then he'd be obliged to offer for her whether he wanted to or not. He'd more or less decided not to, and it wasn't fair to raise her hopes, if indeed she harboured any. He was tempted to plead illness and go home early, rather than spend the evening watching her enchanting smile across the card table. He was an idiot, and no mistake, because it would be purgatory to have her so near, and yet so far from being his.
"Sinley, so glad you could join us," Sir George Hawthorne interrupted his musings. He'd come up behind him and slapped him on the back, as if they were the best of friends.
Sinley tried not to show his impatience at this, and smiled back.
"Indeed, couldn't pass up the chance of another game with you."
The sarcasm in his voice went right over Hawthorne's head.
"Just so, just so."
Hawthorne looked mighty pleased with himself, although why, Sinley had no idea. The man may be nice, he didn't know him well enough to be sure, but he was definitely not the brightest of fellows. Poor Lexi, being stuck with relatives like that.
So what do you make of this highwayman my sister-in-law reported? Hawthorne was asking. What? Oh, that. Some youngster playing a prank, I have no doubt. Sinley had decided to downplay the episode, and hoped that Lexi had had the good sense not to mention his part in her ride home. You think? Well, the magistrate took it seriously and has sent out men to look for the culprit. I hope they catch him and string him up. Damned impudence. To be sure, we can't have that sort of thing around here, Sinley agreed. He noticed Torrington wasn't joining in this conversation, but he jumped in now with his habitual smirk. So, are you still getting to know Rupert? He inquired. Eh? What's this? Hawthorne looked confused. His lordship's been riding with young Rupert and his aunt almost daily, I understand. Sinley frowned at him. We've only met up occasionally, he protested. In fact, yesterday was the first time I've come across them in ages. But I confess I find Rupert a great little fellow. No flies on him. Hawthorne seemed pleased with this praise of his son. Indeed. Hope he's not being a nuisance. Of course not. His aunt keeps him in check. I'm glad to hear that. It's what we pay her for, after all. You pay her? Sinley couldn't help but ask. I thought that as a poor relation, she was working for her keep.
No, of course we'll pay her, Hawthorne blustered, pulling at his cravat as if it was suddenly too tight. When she leaves, whenever that'll be. Not that she needs the money, really. She has a small income under the terms of her father's will. Not much, but enough for the likes of her, I shouldn't doubt.
Sinley ground his teeth to stop from punching the man. What did he know of Lexi's needs? He couldn't even keep his own family on a vastly greater income. Sinley had noticed the run-down appearance of Hawthorne Manor and the neglected state of Sir George's land. It was obvious that whatever income the man had went on gambling and other trivial pursuits rather than where it ought to go. "Well, shall we go and join the ladies?" he suggested. In my experience, they don't like us to linger too long over the port. And I don't wish to linger here.
Don't I know it? Hawthorne sighed. Termagants, the lot of them.
Miss Holloway, this must be such a treat for you. Two parties in less than a week.
Lady Kettridge sat down next to Lexi on the small settee she was occupying without asking first if she minded. The woman's gown was as tasteless as the decor of her house, its garish reds and greens so bright they were almost painful to behold. Lexi knew her own gown was plain, but she couldn't help but feel that hers was more elegant, nonetheless.
"How do you mean?"
Lexi tried to keep her expression neutral.
"Well, governesses aren't usually invited out much, in my experience. You're lucky your employer is also your sister."
"I'm sorry, but you've been misinformed, Lady Kettridge," Lexi said, her voice as frosty as she could make it. "I am not employed here. I'm merely doing Margaret a favour by helping her look after her son until she can find a suitable governess for him. The rest of the time, I'm a guest in this household."
"Oh, I see. I do beg your pardon. Only I was sure Sinley told me you were working here."
Lexi didn't take these words seriously, since she was sure he would never have said anything of the sort.
"Yes, well, men do get into a muddle quite often, don't they? And they have no idea of domestic arrangements," was all she said.
Lady Kettridge changed the subject abruptly.
"Your sister was telling me the other night that you turned down no less than 3 eligible suitors during your London season, Miss Holloway. Wasn't that a little, shall we say, rash?"
"Perhaps I prefer to go my own way, rather than be ruled by a man I cannot respect or like."
"Really?
really? You're quite the blue stocking, aren't you? I had no idea.
Lady Kettridge trilled with laughter, which grated on Lexi's nerves.
Yes, well, judging by the marriages I see around me, I'm glad I stuck to my guns,
she retorted, glancing in Sir Harry's direction. Lady Kettridge's husband had to be at least 70, and was decrepit besides. Lexi was glad she'd escaped being married to such a man.
If you'll excuse me, I believe I see my sister beckoning.
She fled before she was tempted to strangle the woman. Lexi had no idea why Lady Kettridge was needling her, but she'd had enough of it. There was no reason why she should have to listen to any more of the woman's prattling. Just as she was passing the door, it opened, and the gentleman joined them. She almost walked into Sinley, who grabbed her arm to steady her, then kept hold of it. "Ah, there you are, Miss Holloway, ready to partner me at whist. Your brother-in-law is eager to begin."
"I'm sure he is. Very well, but remember, you brought this on yourself."
"No, you did," he whispered. Lexi hadn't played with George before, since he preferred adversaries that were much plumper in the pocket. But when Sinley declared that he was paying for both himself and Lexi, George was nothing loath.
"Capital," he declared. "Your deal, my lord."
Lexi soon found that Sinley had been correct in his reading of George's capabilities as player. Although Margaret, who was his partner, was somewhat more astute, it was a definite struggle to play as badly as the pair of them. But that was what she and Sinley did, although she looked up from time to time to shake her head at him surreptitiously. He seemed determined to lose, and since George and Margaret were consuming vast quantities of brandy, Margaret on the sly, since ladies wouldn't normally touch the stuff, it became easier to cheat as the evening wore on. Sinley only sipped his occasionally, and Lexi preferred to go without. It was getting quite late when George looked up from his cards and waved Jasper over.
"Bring the wine, Jasper," he called out,
and his nephew obliged, wandering over with a glass and a decanter of red wine.
"His lordship needs a drink," George said. "Perhaps wine is more to your taste, my lord." "Yes, looks to me like you're in need of fortification. Your brandy's all gone,"
Jasper agreed. Sinley looked slightly surprised to be singled out in this way, but nodded when he saw that George and Margaret still had half-full snifters.
"Yes, why not?"
He accepted the glass Jasper filled for him without looking at it, and concentrated on the cards in his hand.
"Oh, please, could I have some too?" Lexi asked.
She disliked having to beg anything from Jasper, but she was parched by now, and the room was becoming exceedingly hot.
"Of course. I'll fetch you another glass."
No, here, have this one," Sinley said, holding out the glass to her. "I think I've had enough after all."
"Are you sure?" Lexi hesitated, then took it from him. "Thank you."
But my lord..."
Jasper and George both started to protest, then fell silent. Lexi saw George frown, but didn't care just then. She was so thirsty she drank two large gulps in one go.
"Not to worry, Torrington, I'll have something later," Sinley said. "We're winning for a change." "Damn me, you are too,"
George muttered, his words slightly slurred. Lexi looked at her cards and wondered if Sinley was joking. She had an abysmal hand, and unless he had all the good cards, they weren't going to win at all. They finished the game, and Sinley did indeed have better luck than her, but they lost overall in any case.
"Ha! Told you Lady Luck's on my side at the moment,"
George crowed, grinning at his wife.
"One more game, eh? Before we call it a night."
"Very well." Lexi frowned at Sinley, whose features were suddenly becoming very blurry. She blinked, fighting unexpected nausea, and drew in a deep breath.
"Excuse me, but I don't think..."
Then everything went black. "Damn it all. Someone give me some smelling salts." Sinley had watched in disbelief as Lexi fainted dead away and fell off her chair, landing headfirst on the floor. The carpet was quite thick, but he could still feel a bump underneath her hair, and she hadn't stirred yet, which worried him. He rushed over to pick her up and carried her to a nearby settee. Before anyone could react to his request, Lexi groaned and opened her eyes.
What happened? Oh, dear. Oh, feel sick. Please.
Sinley saw her face turn ashen and realised she was about to cast up the contents of her stomach. He lifted her quickly and sprinted towards the terrace. Fortunately, the French doors had been left open to let in some fresh air. He set her down right next to the balustrade and made her lean over. He was only just in time. She retched for what seemed like ages, and he waved away the more inquisitive of the guests who'd come outside to have a look. "Leave us," he commanded, and they did as they were told, scurrying back inside. He heard snatches of conversation.
"Poor girl. Too much to drink. Happens to the best of us. How very vulgar, to be sure."
And more in the same vein, but tried to ignore them. He would deal with their fellow guests later. For now, he was much more concerned about Lexi. She wasn't acting like someone who'd drunk too much. And in fact, he'd been watching her and knew that she'd taken nothing apart from those two sips of wine. A suspicion began to grow in his mind, or rather, it was one which had been brewing for some days, and now it took root and blossomed. But he was still reluctant to put his suspicions into words. Time enough for that later. There was no doubt that someone had tampered with the wine, however. But who? And why? It was Torrington who'd brought the wine to their table, but that didn't make it certain he was the villain, since Hawthorne had asked for it. And someone else could have slipped something into the bottle while it stood airing somewhere. They had both protested when Lexi took the glass instead of Sinley, but again this proved nothing. Unless they were in cahoots. They could merely have been concerned about the fact that this left the most important guest of the evening without a drink. "Damn it, man, think," he admonished himself, while patting Lexi's back in a soothing manner. She was still heaving from time to time, despite the fact that there could be nothing left inside her. He saw Margaret hovering by the French doors and called out to her. "Lady Hawthorne, I believe your sister needs a physician. This is more serious than merely imbibing too much."
"Do you think so? Very well, I'll have one sent for immediately."
Lexi was taking deep gulps of air, shivering like mad.
"I need to lie down," she muttered.
"I can carry you to your room if you're sure you can make it that far."
"Yes, think so."
He picked her up again and headed indoors, although taking a different route so as to avoid the other guests. In the main hall, he encountered the butler and asked the way to Lexi's room.
"I'll show you, my lord."
The man led them up the stairs, and soon Lexi was lying on her bed with a basin next to her, just in case. She clutched her stomach and moaned.
"Ah, such cramps. Unbearable."
"The doctor will be here soon. He'll help you."
Sinley stroked her brow and muttered soothing words, but it seemed an age before the doctor finally arrived. Sinley rushed to intercept him by the door and whispered,
"Hurry, man. I believe someone may have slipped something into her wine, although I've no idea what. Is there anything you can do?"
The doctor looked startled, but nodded.
"Indeed, I'll do my best. How long ago?"
"About an hour, perhaps a little more."
"And do you know roughly how much she may have swallowed?"
"No, it was disguised in wine, but she only had two mouthfuls out of a whole glass, so probably didn't get the full measure."
"Very well, that's good. You'd better leave me to it, then. This is no place for you now."
"I'll wait outside. Come and find me when you've done what you can, please." In the corridor outside Lexi's room, he hesitated. He wasn't leaving until he knew she'd be all right. But first, he was going in search of that wine bottle to make sure no one else was harmed.
Chapter 7. For Lexi, the night passed in a blur of pain and discomfort.
Her stomach rebelled in several different ways, both against whatever had triggered her illness in the first place, and to the remedies the doctor tried on her. He forced her to swallow large quantities of salt water, which made her vomit again. Then he tried various other things, until she refused to open her mouth any longer. Finally, when her stomach seemed to have calmed down a little, he gave her laudanum, and she slipped into blessed oblivion. When she woke, it was to find Margaret dozing in a chair next to her bed. She sat up when Lexi croaked out a request for water.
"Lexi, you're awake. Thank God. We've been so worried. I've no idea what you ate, but I've told cook that she'd better not serve any seafood again unless she's absolutely certain it's fresh."
Lexi sipped at the glass of water her sister held for her and frowned. She hadn't eaten any seafood, of that she was sure. But since she didn't know what else could have caused such a violent stomach upset, she didn't say anything.
"The doctor will be back later to check on you, but in the meantime, you're not to leave this bed."
Lexi attempted a smile. "Don't think I can."
"Yes, well, I suppose you're weak as a kitten. Would you mind if I just allow Rupert to come in for one moment? He's been pestering me all morning, wanting to see that you're all right."
"Of course." Rupert came charging in soon after, but stopped at the sight of his aunt's no doubt ashen features.
"Do I really look that bad?"
Lexi joked, and he grinned at her.
"Yes, but the doctor says you'll be better soon."
"So glad to hear that.
Did you really cast up all night? Mama says that..." "Rupert, really?"
Margaret protested, ushering him back towards the door.
"I'm sure your poor aunt doesn't wish to discuss such things with you. Now run along and play or something. You may see Lexi again later."
Lexi closed her eyes and went back to sleep. A commotion near the door woke her for the second time that morning.
"Really, my lord, this is most unseemly. I cannot allow you to..."
Lexi opened her eyes and blinked at the sight of Sinley standing by her bedside, with Margaret looking daggers at him from the doorway. "There is no impropriety if you stay where you are, Lady Hawthorne," he said. "I merely wish to see with my own eyes that Miss Holloway is on the mend." He looked down at Lexi, his eyebrows raised. "Are you?"
"To tell you the truth, I'm not sure, but at least my body's calm now, and there's no pain, so... yes, I suppose I am."
"I'm glad to hear it. You had us worried there for a while."
"Yes, I'm sorry."
"Not your fault," he said, his mouth tightening. He threw a glance at Margaret, who was now arguing with Rupert just outside the open door. While she was thus occupied, he bent down and whispered, "I believe you may have been poisoned by mistake, so please, I beg of you, be on your guard for the next few days. I'm going to London to find something out, but I'll be back as quickly as possible. Then I hope to clear up this mystery once and for all."
"Must you go now?"
Lexi knew she had no right to ask this, but couldn't stop herself. She felt so much safer with him around, even though she knew that was probably irrational of her.
"Yes, I'm afraid so. It's very important, and I have to get to the bottom of all these strange happenings. Will you promise to take good care of yourself until I come back?"
"Yes, if you will do likewise."
He smiled.
"You may be sure of that." In a louder voice he added, "Good day to you, Miss Holloway. I wish you a speedy recovery."
"I believe you may have been poisoned by mistake," Sinley had said, and Lexi had plenty of time to think about his words during the next few days. She was certain she hadn't eaten anything bad, because she'd consumed very little, being engrossed in her conversation with Sinley at the dinner table. No seafood, nothing that tasted suspicious, and nothing that she was alone in sampling. She came to the conclusion that it had to have been the wine, and if that was so, then the intended victim had been Sinley. This thought made her go cold all over. But who might want to harm Sinley? Jasper, who'd brought him the wine, or George, who'd called for it, or someone else entirely? She couldn't think of a reason for George wanting to poison Sinley. And the only connection with Jasper was the fact that he'd said he was related to Lady Catherine Downes. Did he bear a grudge on her behalf somehow? But if that was so, what purpose would it serve to kill Sinley now Lady Catherine was gone and the Brooke family already had possession of the Downes lands? Lexia wondered who would inherit the estate in the event of Sinley's death, but concluded that it had to be whoever was heir to his other properties. It didn't make sense, and no matter how much she mulled it over, she couldn't reach a satisfactory conclusion. The only thing she knew for sure was that she needed to be vigilant, and perhaps watch both Jasper and George, just in case. She was extremely weak for a few days, and was happy to follow the doctor's orders to rest as much as possible. Gradually her body grew stronger, and she began to tolerate food once more.
"Are you ever coming riding with me again, Aunt Lexi?"
Rupert complained. She smiled at him. "Yes, when the doctor says I'm fit enough. I'm sorry, but us old folk recover more slowly than someone like you. How about you read to me? Then perhaps I'll grow stronger more quickly."
"You think so?"
"Absolutely. While you read, I can rest my eyes, you see." Rupert crawled onto the bed and leaned against the cushions next to her, then proceeded to read her all his favourite stories. Lexi didn't mind. She enjoyed his company, and he cheered her up no end, preventing her from endlessly rehashing her theories about the poisoning. It also served to keep him out of Margaret's way, and thus all was peaceful. When Lexi emerged from her sick room at last, she found the entrance hall had been turned into a temporary battleground. She paused at the top of the last flight of stairs and smiled at the scene below her.
"Take that, you scoundrel! And never darken these doors again!"
"Huh! We'll just see about that, sir. I'll show you, you dirty rotten—" There was a sword fight of epic proportions going on, but since the weapons in question were made of wood, as were the shields being used, Lexi didn't fear that any blood would be spilled. She and Rupert had played this game only the week before, but she could see that he now had a much worthier opponent, although she had no idea who he was. The young man, a skinny youth no more than 20 years of age at the most, with a pock-marked complexion, caught sight of Lexi and stopped fighting.
"Halt!"
he shouted, and held up a hand to Rupert, who obeyed, albeit somewhat reluctantly.
"Behold the damsel in distress that I have come to save," he said with a smile that Lexi couldn't help but reciprocate.
His eyes were dancing with merriment, and she warmed to him immediately, but she remained on her guard nonetheless. Who was he, and what was he doing here? He seemed to be very much at home.
"What? No, that's just Aunt Lexi,"
Rupert protested. The young man threw him a look of pity that was so theatrical Lexi almost burst out laughing.
"Are you blind?" he inquired. "'Tis the Lady of the Tower, the one who's been so cruelly imprisoned by you and whom I have pledged to save or die trying." "Oh, right," Rupert caught on and grinned. "Well, I shall do all in my power to stop you, sir. She is mine, and I'm going to feed her to the dragon tonight."
Lexi shook her head at the pair of them. "Honestly, I should never have read you those stories of the knights of old, should I?" She curtsied to the young man. "I'm Alexandra Holloway, Rupert's aunt, as you may have gathered." He bowed back.
"Nicholas Torrington, at your service, Miss Holloway."
He was serious at last, although his eyes were still twinkling, making it difficult to resist his charm. "You're a relation of Mr. Jasper Torrington?" Lexi couldn't hide the surprise in her voice. This young man didn't look anything like Jasper, and he seemed open and friendly, the complete opposite of the man Lexi had come to mistrust. Although, perhaps, it was all an act,
Jasper could be extremely charming, too, when he put his mind to it. "His younger brother," he said, and added with a grin, "for my sins." "I see." Lexi didn't quite know how to reply to that and thought it best not to comment. "I hear you've been ill, but trust you are now fully recovered." "Indeed I am, thank you. I was just on my way to have breakfast. I take it you have both already eaten." "Yes, but that was hours ago," Rupert said. "I'm famished. Do let's join her for some more, Nick." Nick smiled at the boy. "By all means. I need all the sustenance I can get if I'm to keep up with you. I'm not used to so much exercise, you know." For Lexi's benefit, he added, "I've just finished my studies at Oxford. Not much call for sword fighting there." "No, I imagine not. Are you on your way home, then, or have you come to stay here for a while with your uncle?" "I'm just passing through, but Uncle George did say I was welcome to remain for a week or two." "Well, I'm sure your brother will be pleased to have your company," Lexi said politely, although she wasn't sure Jasper was ever pleased about anything. If he was up to no good, however, he might appreciate his brother's help. She shook her head at herself. She was becoming morbidly suspicious. "Come along then, Rupert. I'm actually hungry for the first time this week." Margaret looked up from the breakfast table and frowned at Lexi when the trio entered the dining room. "Good morning. Are you sure you should be up and about?" she said. "Yes, I feel much better today, and my appetite's returned, thank goodness. I thought I might go for a short ride, too. It's such a lovely day." "Well, don't overdo it. You needn't listen to Rupert if he's been pestering you. He thinks only of himself." Lexi bit back the retort that Rupert was the least selfish member of the family. She didn't think such a remark would be helpful, so she contented herself with saying, "I'm fine, Margaret, don't fret." "Can Nick come with us?" Rupert asked through a mouthful of scrambled eggs. "Then we can be knights, escorting you to your doom. Or maybe we should be saving you instead, fighting the foul dragon."
"That sounds delightful," Lexi tried to keep a straight face. "But perhaps Mr. Torrington has better things to do with his time. It would seem he's already spent the better part of the morning entertaining you."
"It was a pleasure, Miss Holloway. I would enjoy a ride if you don't mind me coming along, that is."
"No, of course not."
What else could she say, after all, without being impolite? Although she would have felt safer going riding with just Rupert for company at the moment. The three of them set off, and although Lexi still felt a little weak, she was fine, as long as they took it slowly.
"I refuse to ride quickly to my doom," she told Rupert with a smile. "No one would want to hurry up on their way to being eaten by a dragon. And you must keep a lookout for my loyal retainers. They might be coming to rescue me at any time."
Rupert played along with this game and didn't protest at the slow pace.
"That was masterly, Miss Holloway," Nick whispered. "I can see that you're well used to handling small boys."
"Actually, I'm not. Rupert's the only one I know, but I used to have a lot of imagination myself as a child, so I can readily enter into his games." "You appear to have a knack for that yourself."
"Yes, well, I've had a lot of practice. My sister has a whole brood of them, all boys. You should try sword fighting with four at once. Quite an experience, I can tell you."
Lexi had to laugh at that.
"I can imagine. It's good of you to bother with Rupert, though, when you don't have to."
"Not at all. I enjoy it, too. And I can't afford to spend all my time gaming, like my brother. I have to make my way in the world."
Lexi glanced at him, wondering if this was just an act. But she could see no guile in his features. She had to conclude that he was serious, which would mean he was vastly different in character from Jasper. Could this be true? If so, she marvelled that two brothers could be so unlike each other. Only time would tell, though, and Lexi vowed to keep an eye on young Nick as well as his brother. Either way, she was very glad he'd come.
It would certainly make mealtimes a lot easier to bear, as Jasper would have someone else to converse with from now on. Sinley was ushered into the office of Mr. Willis, senior partner of Messrs. Willis, Booth and Snetterton, solicitors, by an obsequious young man who said, "My lord," after every second word. It was becoming very tiresome, and Sinley was glad when the door closed, and he was alone with Mr. Willis. "Do sit down, please," Mr. Willis indicated the comfortable armchair on the opposite side of the desk to his own. "This is an unexpected pleasure, to be sure. I trust all is well and the estate prospering?"
"Thank you, yes. As you know, with my late wife's financial assistance, I made all the necessary repairs and improvements. My holdings are beginning to be prosperous again, which is a great relief. It was touch and go when my father gambled away almost my entire inheritance, but I do believe everything's going the right way now."
"Excellent. Glad to hear it. Then, how can I be of assistance?"
"Well, I'm really only here because I need clarification regarding certain matters pertaining to my late wife's will."
"Oh, how so? I thought we dealt with that satisfactorily at the time of her demise."
Mr. Willis looked puzzled, as well he might, Sinley thought.
"So did I. But there appears to be something we overlooked. Could you have it brought from your archives, if you please?"
"Certainly."
The fawning young man was called in and soon returned with the required documents, which Mr. Willis spread out on his desk.
"Now, what was it that you needed to be clarified, my lord?" "As far as I remember, Catherine left her entire estate to me to do with as I wished. Is that correct?"
"Yes, indeed. It was not entailed, and therefore her late husband had bequeathed it to her outright, with just a few small gifts to distant relatives. As you know, he had no close kin of any kind."
"He had a cousin, I believe."
"Yes, a Mr. Henry Torrington, but he didn't stand to inherit anything, and there was no title to be passed on. Your late wife was a lady in her own right, and Mr. Downes not even a knight."
Mr. Willis looked as though he disapproved of such an unequal match, but Sinley knew that Catherine had married for love, and had been supremely happy until her first husband died.
"Tell me, if you would, Mr. Willis, what the will says should happen to the Downes estate if I pass away in the near future."
"You, my lord, hopefully that won't be for many years to come. But in that case, the estate will be inherited by your children, should you have any."
"And if I do not?"
Let me see." Mr. Willis perused the documents in front of him for a few minutes, then frowned.
"Lady Catherine's will makes no mention of this, but refers to her first husband's will." He moved another sheet of paper to the top of the pile. "I have it here since they were kept together." Another lengthy silence followed, then Mr. Willis looked up.
"Well, this is most unusual, and I'm surprised I didn't immediately recall it. The will states that should Lady Catherine remarry, she must first have a prenuptial agreement drawn up so that she retains full control of all the Downs land and wealth."
"I know we did that, and it was her choice to leave it to me upon her death."
"Just so, my lord. She could bequeath her property and possessions to her new husband and his or their children, if that was what she wished. However, if there were no children from her second marriage either..."
"Well, now, look for yourself, my lord."
Mr. Willis pushed the document towards Sinley and pointed at the clause in question.
"Ah, I thought so. Damn.
My lord, would you care to explain further?"
Mr. Willis was blinking at him as if struggling for comprehension.
"Would it surprise you to hear there have been several attempts on my life in the last few weeks, Mr. Willis?"
Willis's eyes opened wide.
"Attempted murder?"
"Most definitely. And you might also be interested to hear that the person mentioned in this will is at present residing in my neighbourhood."
"Well, that's intriguing, to be sure."
Sinley gritted his teeth.
Isn't it just?
But really, my lord, the late Mr. Downes's will has no bearing on anything. Once ownership of his estates passed to his wife, and you had complied with the clause about a prenuptial agreement, his wishes cannot dictate what happens next. They are just that. Wishes. So if someone is trying to have you removed, shall we say, he would only be benefiting your heir. Could he be behind it? Your second cousin Henry, isn't it?
No, I shouldn't think so. He's in India, busy making himself a fortune as a nabob. And he's never been the grasping, jealous kind, quite the opposite. No, I'd say it's the person mentioned in Mr. Downes's will. He must have misunderstood and obviously thinks this is legal.
You must find him with all speed, then, my lord, and disabuse him of this notion.
Mr. Willis blinked, consternation and worry clear in his eyes.
Surely he would then cease his heinous activities.
I don't know. We're dealing with a single-minded and presumably desperate individual here. I doubt he'd believe me. He'd probably just think it a ruse.
Sinley sighed. But I will try my best. Would you mind having someone make a copy of those wills for me, please? They might come in handy in the near future. And please, could you write me a note to say that your professional opinion is that the wishes mentioned in Mr. Downes's will are not legally binding? At least then I'll have it in writing, and it won't just be my word against his.
At once, my lord. But how will you approach this dangerous person?
I have no idea, Mr. Willis. But I'll think of something, you may be sure of that.
Chapter 8
Miss Holloway, where are you going?
The voice that came hissing out of the darkness gave Lexi quite a shock. Her heart hammered so hard she had to put a hand up to her chest to try and contain the frantic beating.
Mr. Torrington, you scared me half to death. Please do call me Nick. I can't stand all this formality. It's so deadly dull, don't you agree?
Lexi hesitated, then decided not to stand on ceremony.
Well, perhaps when no one else is about. But only if you'll call me Lexi, then. Agreed. Now, tell me what you're about, please. It's nearly midnight and you look to be dressed for riding. Rather unusual, wouldn't you say?
He eyed her outfit, and Lexi knew she would have to tell him at least part of the truth.
I was, going to spy on someone. I believe there's some mischief afoot, and if I'm to prevent it, I need to know more. I thought I might go to the local inn and listen to a few conversations.
The local inn? Have you taken leave of your senses? I mean, I do beg your pardon, but that's not a place for a lady such as yourself. You could be accosted, or worse.
Lexi sighed.
I suppose you're right. But then how will I find anything out? I ought to have dressed up as a serving woman or something. Besides, I was only going to loiter outside. How about pretending to be a boy?
Nick grinned at her, his teeth gleaming white in the moonlight.
What? I'm not much taller than you are. My clothes should fit you tolerably well. What do you say? It will be an adventure.
Really, Nick, you shouldn't be aiding and abetting me. She tried to sound stern, but failed. She'd been terrified of going out on her own. But now that Nick was saying he wanted to help her, it seemed much more feasible. If only she could be sure she could trust him. What if he was in cahoots with the very people she was about to spy on? It would seem she'd have to take that chance.
And why not? To my mind, girls need to enjoy themselves occasionally, too. My sisters were forever playing such pranks, and no one ever found out. Come on, let's see if we can't find you a disguise.
15 minutes later, Lexi was walking towards the stables once more, dressed in breeches that felt very strange as they hugged her legs, a man's shirt, waistcoat, and an ill-fitting jacket. On her head, Nick had crammed a curly beaver hat, which kept her hair confined, and she had a scarf wound round the bottom half of her face. So, too, did Nick.
"We don't want anyone to recognise me, either," he whispered. "They might put two and two together in that case."
They extracted two horses from the stables as quietly as possible, then set off for the inn. Riding astride felt very decadent to Lexi, but she marvelled at how much easier it was, and wished she could ride this way every day.
"So, who are we spying on?" Nick asked, when they were out of earshot of the house. "I take it you had someone specific in mind?"
I'd rather not say." Lexi couldn't very well tell Nick that she thought his brother and uncle might be murderers, and that he was under suspicion himself. He'd soon lose his taste for adventure then, she thought.
"Oh, so it's my brother, then," he said and nodded. "Thought so."
Lexi gasped. "I didn't say it was." Nick held up a hand.
"You don't have to. He's a thoroughly bad egg, is Jasper, as I know to my cost. And I've seen the way he and Uncle George keep putting their heads together. They're up to something. You mark my words."
"Perhaps, but I can't be sure. Someone else may be using them. I just wish I knew who that someone could be."
"Doesn't matter. Because we're going to stop them, right? That's why we're spying on them, isn't it?"
"Something like that, yes." Lexi took a deep breath, trying to draw strength from Nick's optimism. It would seem she'd been wrong to be suspicious of him, unless he was very clever and was just playing a role. She decided to carry on being on her guard just in case. But she was beginning to like Nick, and found herself hoping he was being sincere. Either way, she couldn't help but feel that they were on a wild goose chase, and she should never have had the notion of going out in the first place, never mind allowed him to accompany her. "Maybe this wasn't such a good idea. I mean, if they catch sight of you, they'll clam up, and I doubt this disguise will fool anyone. Your brother and George will both know it's me." "Not if we don't show ourselves. Inns are crowded places of an evening, and usually fairly dark. We should be able to sit down with our backs towards them, but close enough to listen to what they're saying."
"You think?" "It's worth a try, anyway. If they catch us out, we'll just say Rupert dared you to dress up as a boy and go and have a drink at the local inn, and he sent me along as a witness. Jasper will believe anything with regard to wages, because he's never refused one in his entire life."
"And you, do you gamble, Nick?"
"Never. By the time I was old enough to do so, Jasper and my father had already spent every penny. I decided to work for a living instead. Perhaps I shall be a lawyer."
"Very wise. Oh, look, we're nearly there."
The inn was impossible to miss, since it was the only house in the village with noise coming out of it, and chinks of light spilling through the window shutters. There was also some melee going on outside, with several drunk men swinging punches at each other without much success. Lexi stepped closer to Nick and averted her gaze. She couldn't help but wonder why George and Jasper would frequent such a lowly establishment, but assumed they were both desperate to gamble. Perhaps this was the only place to offer such entertainment every night. She also wondered whether Margaret knew about this. Surely her sister would object to her husband spending time here. They'd left their horses safely tethered outside the village and walked the rest of the way to the inn. Nick showed her how to walk with a more manly stride rather than her usual ladylike steps, and Lexi had to hide a smile. If their undertaking hadn't been so serious, she would have enjoyed this hugely. She had never imagined wearing breeches would give such a sensation of freedom. "Don't say anything. Leave all the talking to me," Nick instructed. "Your voice will be too high-pitched. I'll pretend you're my younger brother. Try to look surly in the manner of adolescence. That'll be best." Lexi did as she was told. She knew she ought not to be here at all. But now they'd come this far, she didn't want to turn back. Inside the inn, the noise level was deafening, and Lexi could see that Nick had been right. It was dark and dingy, with smoke from the fire hanging like a low cloud over the room. It smelled awful. A mixture of sweat, stale ale, candle wax, and other things Lexi would rather not think about. She tried not to wrinkle her nose and took shallow breaths through her mouth so as to avoid the noxious odours. The scarf around her face helped somewhat as well. There was laughter and singing, shrieking and shouting, and Lexi had no idea how anyone made themselves heard at all.
This way,
Nick shouted, taking her elbow to tug her along. He grabbed two tankards of ale from a serving wench, tucking a coin into her bodice as payment.
Oh, you cheeky sod, those were for me other customers.
She fished the coin out. But when she saw that it was more than the ale was worth, her tone changed abruptly.
But seeing as you're such a fine young fella, come see me later, if you've a mind.
She winked at him and sashayed away through the crowd. Nick's cheeks turned pink above the rim of his scarf.
I think I see my brother over in the corner. Follow me and keep your face down.
Nick ploughed his way over to where, by some miracle, there were a couple of empty seats on a high-backed wooden settle. This prevented them from being seen by anyone behind them, which was ideal. They sat down, and he handed Lexi a tankard.
Here, hold this and pretend to drink. I doubt you'll like it, so don't take more than a sip.
Lexi tried it and shuddered. He was right. It was vile, and she was very grateful he'd warned her.
Can you hear them? She whispered in Nick's ear.
He listened for a moment, then nodded.
Yes. Shh, now, and let's see what we can glean.
For the next hour they sat on the hard seat, ostensibly drinking ale and whispering together. No one paid them any attention, and they were able to listen to most of the conversation behind them. At first, George and Jasper appeared to be playing dice with some other men, but when their funds ran out, the others left them to nurse their drinks and their bad tempers. That was when the conversation finally became interesting.
Damnation! But I need an inheritance now, they heard Jasper grumble. It's intolerable always being out of pocket. Can't even play a decent game of dice without having to stop halfway through for lack of funds.
Yes, George sounded, if anything, even more morose. You should count yourself lucky you don't have a family to support as well. Margaret's just spent a small fortune on new clothes for the boy. And for what? He'll have grown out of them come August. And now she's pestering me for new gowns as well. Well, unless she wins the money for them at the card table, she won't be having any.
I've told you, George, if only you'll help me with my plans, I'll give you a sum to put you in the clear again. Come now. It's not as if you have to kill the man with your bare hands. It'll be an accident, for heaven's sake.
You tried that, and it didn't work. Damn near killed my sister-in-law instead, and that doctor fellow kept pestering me afterwards, saying he was sure it wasn't food poisoning. You'll have to be a bit more subtle, my friend. Besides, it's all too risky, if you ask me. There's bound to be questions asked when you come forward with your claim afterwards. Someone will smell a rat. Mark my words.
Well, I've come up with a better plan. You know Emma's having another of her little parties on Friday.
Yes, what of it? No point going if we don't have the means to play.
Never mind the gaming. Listen, Emma's convinced she can get his lordship to attend, and if so, there's only one direct route from his house to hers. We'll have to set a trap.
What kind of trap? And keep your voice down. Anyone could hear you.
Nick and Lexi both hunkered down, even though they knew they weren't visible. Lexi held her breath, expecting to be denounced at any moment, before they learned anything really useful. But nothing happened.
No one's listening in here. They're all too drunk and minding their own business, Jasper said,
but lowered his voice nonetheless, which made it difficult to catch what he was saying.
After the party, rope across the road. The bend near... That's the place... Off the horse. Neck. Mine at last.
Nick and Lexi exchanged a glance, and she could see that he was as pale as she felt. His eyes, huge with shock. This proved to her beyond doubt that he wasn't in league with his brother, and she was very far from being a bad egg, as he'd described Jasper earlier.
Let's get out of here,
he hissed, and she was nothing loath.
They set their tankards on a nearby table and hurried out into the fresh night air. Lexi bent over for a moment, breathing heavily. Nausea churned inside her at the thought of what Jasper was planning. But she told herself that at least now she could try to prevent it.
"Do you know who they were talking about?" Nick asked.
Lexi nodded.
"Yes, Lord Sinley. There have been at least two attempts on his life these last couple of weeks that I know of. They must be planning another. Dear God.
Sinley? But why?"
"Your brother spoke of an inheritance. I know you're related to Sinley through his late wife, so does anyone in your family stand in line to inherit anything from him?"
"Not that I know," Nick frowned. "But then again, my father and Jasper never told me anything, said I was too young. So if either of them were due anything, they'd keep it to themselves. I can't see how that can be, though. I mean, old Mr. Downes died ages ago, and Lady Catherine was free to leave everything to her new husband."
"Well, there must be something in it for Jasper, otherwise why would he be contemplating such a drastic plan?"
Lexi shuddered. It didn't bear thinking of. They walked in silence back to their horses, but there Nick stopped and leaned his head against the horse's neck.
"I'm sorry, Lexi," he whispered. "I mean, he's my brother, but right now I'm ashamed to own it. I had no idea he would sink that low. He must be truly desperate." "Do you think your father gets Dan's house if Lord Sinley dies?" "Our father's dead. Jasper's the only one who will inherit in that case. But I can't see that this would be possible. Sinley must have other heirs."
"And you?" Lexi hated having to ask, but she had to be sure he really had nothing to do with this vile business. He smiled ruefully.
"I am the youngest son, and we receive nothing as a rule. It would all be for Jasper. There could be something, I suppose. A small bequest of some sort. Maybe he's just making sure Sinley never has any children. But that's heinous, I know. I don't know what to say. I'll understand if you don't wish to speak to me ever again."
"Don't be silly, Nick. I don't tie you with the same brush. If you'd been a part of this scheme, you wouldn't have taken me to that inn tonight now, would you?"
"I suppose not, unless I was as devious as Jasper."
His jaw tightened.
"Bastard," he muttered, "begging your pardon."
"No, I can see now that you're not devious, and you cannot be held responsible for your brother's actions. Now what we need to do is come up with a plan to thwart them. I have to speak to Sinley. I wonder if he's back yet."
"I'll find out. Perhaps we can go and see him tomorrow night."
"Another adventure?" she teased, and finally had the satisfaction of seeing Nick's expression clear a little. "If you don't mind, I'd like to talk to him alone, but you can escort me there, if you wish."
"You can count on it. Until then, we pretend that all is normal. Agreed?"
"Absolutely."
Chapter 9. The morning after his return from London, Sinley rode over to the place where he usually met up with Lexi and Rupert. He had no idea whether she was well enough to go out yet. But he was hoping that even if she wasn't, young Rupert might take his horse out accompanied by a groom. The boy would be sure to know how matters stood with Lexi, and could put Sinley's mind at rest. He was surprised to see Lexi and Rupert coming towards him with a new riding companion, a gangly young man with whom they seemed to be on remarkably good terms. A demon of jealousy stirred within him, but he tried to ignore it. Throughout his trip to London, Lexi had been in his thoughts constantly, and he'd half decided to throw caution to the wind and at least ask her if she would mind marrying someone like himself. However, if she'd found a more suitable man to marry, then he shouldn't stand in her way or confuse her. He was, after all, not a particularly good catch, apart from having a title, and an estate that was beginning to prosper again, if not much more as yet. Also, he may be too old for her. At 5 and 30, he was at least 10 years her senior.
"Good morning," he greeted them, trying his best not to show any of these thoughts openly. He was gratified to note that Lexi's eyes lit up at the sight of him, but then they clouded over once more, as if she'd recalled something bad. "Are you well?"
"My lord, how nice to see you again. Yes, I'm fully recovered now, thank you. I trust you had a safe journey."
"Indeed, ma'am. And a productive one, too. But let us not talk of such things now."
He looked inquiringly at the young man who'd bowed to him, but not spoken as yet.
"Nicholas Torrington, at your service, my lord."
He stood up in the saddle and bowed again. Sinley returned this with a nod.
"I'm Sinley, pleased to meet you."
"Nick is Mr. Jasper Torrington's brother," Lexi explained. "He's just finished his studies at Oxford and was on his way home but stopped here for a visit."
"Ah, I see." "Yes, and he's a capital swordsman," Rupert put in. "We've rescued Aunt Lexi from being eaten by a dragon several times now." "Have you, by Jove?"
Sinley couldn't help but smile at the boy.
"If I'd known she was in such mortal danger, I'd have come to help out as well. We can't have dragons on the loose in these parts."
Rupert grinned.
"No, sir, but don't worry, he's dead now. We killed him yesterday, and I don't think he can be made to live again, even with magic."
"I'm right glad to hear that. Shall we ride on and you can tell me what else I've missed?"
"Oh, yes. Well, there were these renegade knights who wanted to kidnap her, and although she fought bravely, they tied her up and threw her in a dungeon."
Lexi and Nick exchanged a glance of amusement as they listened to Rupert prattling on.
"Poor Lord Sinley," Lexi whispered. "I fear he is likely going to hear the long version of this tale."
Nick looked like he was making an effort not to laugh out loud.
"Yes, but he seems to be taking it in good humour. Rupert keeps telling me his lordship is a wonderful man. Do you think he's right?"
Lexi felt her cheeks become suffused with colour and looked away.
"A very kind one, at any rate," she replied, "with infinite patience when it comes to little boys, just like you."
"Perhaps he's had a lot of practice as well. I don't know him at all. Our family never saw Lady Catherine after her remarriage."
"Was there some bad blood then?" Lexi dared to ask, curious to know more.
"Not with her, I don't think. By all accounts, she was very amiable. But her former husband disliked my father intensely, from what I can remember. I believe it was the gambling he was opposed to, and my father thought him an old killjoy."
He shrugged.
"Families, eh? They're impossible."
"Yes, don't I know it?"
Lexi thought of her own brother and his mean ways. Lexi had plenty of opportunity to study Sinley from behind as they rode, and she couldn't help but feel relieved and happy that he'd returned. It was as though something had been missing while he was away, and a part of her had wondered whether he was even going to come back. It would have been more prudent to stay away for the moment, with a would-be murderer on the loose. But he was obviously no coward. Nick leaned over and whispered, "Are you still set on going to see him tonight? Or do you want me to distract Rupert so that you can talk to him now?"
"I think tonight would be better," Lexi replied. "You never know who might be about, and sound carries, even when you're trying to be careful. There could be someone hidden among the trees listening."
A shiver went through her as she remembered the man who had shot at them, and she surveyed their surroundings with a searching gaze. Since the forest was dense in places, he could have been close enough to hear her talking to Sinley as well. Perhaps he'd even heard them discuss their first meeting. She debated whether to warn Sinley of her intended visit, and opened her mouth to do so, but then changed her mind. He might say that it wouldn't be proper, and she was determined to go, come what may. Besides, she would have Nick with her, at least as far as the door. No harm would befall her. She said goodbye rather absently,
then went back to Hawthorne to await the coming night. Lexi and Nick waited until George and Jasper had left for the inn again before setting out on their mission. Fortunately for them, Margaret had retired early with a headache, and there was no one else about. As an extra precaution, Lexi donned the male clothing again.
"You're going to talk to his lordship dressed like that?"
Nick goggled at her when she appeared in the stable yard.
"What will he think?"
"It doesn't matter what he thinks, as long as he believes me to be telling the truth. I have to make him listen. He's in grave danger."
"I suppose.
Besides, my reputation would be in shreds in any case were I to be caught visiting Lord Sinley on my own, so it won't make any difference how I'm dressed."
"You're not alone, though. I'm with you."
"Ahem. Aren't you forgetting something?" Nick's expression was blank, so she clarified. "You're a man, too, and I shouldn't be alone with you either, even if you're slightly younger than me. George could force you to marry me for this, you know."
"Oh, good grief!"
Nick looked thunderstruck.
"But I... forgive me. I had come to think of you as a sort of honorary sister. No offence. I mean, not that you're not beautiful and..."
Lexi laughed.
"Stop. Stop. There's no need to explain. I know what you're trying to say, and I feel the same way. But that's not how others might see it."
Nick sighed.
"You're right. I'm sorry. I should have thought of that. Should we wake one of the grooms and take him with us?"
"Heavens, no. Let's just go and get this over with." Riding in the dark was eerie, and Lexi was glad she wasn't alone. She was startled several times by the hoot of an owl or the scurrying of foxes and badgers across their path. But she tried to control her nerves and breathed deeply to calm herself. Sinley Priory was in complete darkness when they finally arrived, and Lexi bit her lip at this sight. She had hoped that his lordship was the kind of man who stayed up late, but it looked as though everyone had gone to bed.
"Oh, bother," she muttered. "Now what do we do?"
"Let's walk all the way round," Nick suggested. "If we see lights anywhere, we can knock on the door or throw stones at the window." They left the horses tied to a tree in the park and walked round to the back of the house. Here they were in luck.
"Look, there's a light over there at the French windows," Lexi whispered. "Come on."
They tiptoed across a large paved terrace, and Lexi saw now that there were several windows in a row that were lit up, although the light was faint. She put an eye to the glass and stared in through an opening in the curtains. At first she didn't see anyone, but then a movement to the right caught her gaze, and Sinley walked into her line of vision.
"He's in there," she whispered to Nick. "You stand guard over there, please, and I'll knock. I pray he's alone, otherwise I'll have to make a run for it and hope I'm not recognised."
"Very well." Nick went to lean on the stone balustrade in the shadow of the house, and Lexi took a deep breath. She knocked hard on the French doors and waited. A second later, the curtains were flung back and Sinley stared out, scowling. His frown turned to one of puzzlement, and he opened the doors.
"What the devil? Who are you?"
Lexi moved into the light and lifted up her face.
"It is I," she whispered. "Are you alone?"
"Lexi, by all that's holy, have you run mad?" He stepped outside to stand beside her and peered into the darkness. "Did you come here by yourself?"
"No, Nick's over there."
Lexi nodded in Nick's direction.
"Can I please come inside for a moment? I need to speak to you."
"Very well, but this had better be worth it." He pulled her inside and shut the door, then closed the curtains, making sure they left no gap this time. Then he turned to look at her, taking in her male attire with disbelief written all over his face. His eyes widened even further when she took the beaver hat off and shook out her hair, which was loose, since it was easier to tuck in that way.
"Lexi, for the love of God, what's the meaning of this? Are you eloping with young Torrington and in need of funds? I don't have much, but I'll give you what there is. Or I can hide you, if that's what you wish."
"Elope with Nick?
Don't be ridiculous, my lord. Why would I want to marry him? He's not even finished his education yet, and we're just friends. There is nothing else between us.
I don't understand. Why are you here, then?
I've come to warn you. Nick and I overheard Jasper talking to George, and he plans to murder you.
Oh, well, I've already gathered that for myself. He smiled ruefully. I'm not an imbecile, Lexi. The problem is I can't prove it, although I do have some circumstantial evidence.
I never thought you were, but I wanted to let you know exactly how he's going to do it, so that we may stop him.
We?
Yes. Nick and I want to help. He feels bad about it, and he wants his brother to be caught. He says it's time Jasper had his comeuppance, and he never thought he'd stoop this low.
Does he now?
Sinley sounded very doubtful, so Lexi felt the need to defend Nick.
I know it may be difficult to believe, and I doubted it myself at first, but Nick really isn't like his brother at all. He's good through and through. If you'd seen his expression when we found out, you'd be as certain of that as I am.
Well, be that as it may, I can't, in all conscience, involve either you or him in this. It would be too dangerous. The best thing would be if I could talk to Jasper in order to explain that he's labouring under a misapprehension. He's not going to inherit anything from me, no matter what he does.
Really? But then why does he want to murder you?
Lexi frowned.
Probably because he's seen his late uncle's will, and doesn't realise it's not legally binding. There's a clause in there mentioning wishes, but it wouldn't stand up in a court of law.
I doubt he'd listen to you, even if you could get him on his own and talk to him. He might not believe you. He's already gone too far.
I know. Sinley sighed.
Very well. Tell me what the plan is and I'll deal with it.
Lexi shook her head. No, you must let us help you, my lord.
He sighed and took a step closer.
Jake. My name is Jake. Please stop calling me my lord.
What? But I couldn't possibly...
Lexi was suddenly very aware of his nearness and swallowed hard. He smiled and shook his head at her.
You can ride out unchaperoned in the middle of the night dressed in men's clothing and with a young man who is not your brother, but you can't address me by my name when I want you to. Do you realise how absurd that is?
I suppose so. She had to smile back because he was right. It did seem ridiculous.
He took another step forward and was now standing so close she had to look up to talk to him. She breathed in the wonderful, exotic scent of him, and it sent a thrill down her spine.
Then say it, please. I want to hear you say my name.
Jake?
She stared into his eyes and couldn't tear her gaze away. The look in them was burning a trail down through her entire body, and she began to tremble.
Jake, I want to help you. Please?
Very well, but on one condition.
What's that?
You let me kiss you again first.
Lexi put her palms on his chest, feeling the hard ridges of it as it rose and fell with his breathing.
You know, I've never been able to deny you that particular request.
His smile widened.
That's true. But there is something else I want you to agree to this time as well. Will you marry me? Because if I keep kissing you every time we meet, fairly soon I won't be able to stop at that.
Lexi drew in a hasty breath and almost choked.
You want to marry me? But you can't. I'm nobody. I have nothing to bring you.
His expression turned grim, and he flung away from her.
You think I only marry women for gain? You and everyone else?
No, Jake, that's not what I meant at all. I'd marry you if you were a pauper. But you're an earl, you have responsibilities. I'm sure it's different for you.
He came closer again and took hold of her hands, looking deep into her eyes, still serious.
Tell me the truth. You believe me to be a grasping opportunist. After all, I married a woman old enough to be my mother just to save my estate, didn't I?
Lexi shook her head. I've always felt sure there was more to it than that. If you'd been that desperate, you would have eloped with some young heiress or something. Your reputation was such that another scandal wouldn't have mattered.
Sinley's expression relaxed. You really think that?
Yes, I do.
Lexi, my love, then you are unique.
Without warning, he pulled her into his arms and held her tight.
I thank you for your faith in me.
Lexi looked up. Am I right, then?
Yes, you are.
He buried his face in her hair and breathed deeply, as if he was memorizing her scent.
It was Catherine's idea, actually. She had just found out that she had consumption, and the doctors gave her a year, two at most. With no relatives to leave her estate to, she said she wanted to help me because I was the son of her dearest friend, and she couldn't bear for Down's house to fall into the hands of her first husband's distant relatives, whom he disliked with a vengeance. I resisted at first. I knew what people would think. But in the end, she persuaded me. I desperately wanted to save my own estate, which had been left on the brink of disaster by my father. Since I had a rather, shall we say, unsavoury reputation myself, I knew no respectable man would give me his daughter in marriage, not unless I used underhand methods, which I didn't want to do. So I agreed. It seemed preferable to eloping with some young chit, who'd regret it the instant she realized she'd been ostracized from society for doing so.
You did the right thing, Lexi whispered. You've saved your inheritance for future generations, and I've seen how well you look after your tenants.
I try, but sometimes I think perhaps I shouldn't have done it. I thought I'd ruin my chances of ever having the sort of marriage I really wanted. And then you came back to tempt me.
I'm not sorry I did, she said with a smile. And he smiled back, then bent to place his mouth firmly on hers. It was a gentle kiss at first, infinitely tender and loving, and Lexi allowed herself to melt against him. Her whole body sang with joy. He wanted to marry her, and kissing him was no longer a sin. They would have their whole lives together. There was no hurry. Sinley deepened the kiss, and Lexi was lost in a maelstrom of sensation, which was only broken by a rapping on the French windows. They looked up, somewhat dazed.
Damnation, Sinley swore. I'd forgotten about him. I suppose we'd best let him in.
Yes, poor Nick. He must be wondering what's happening. I've been in here an age, and I haven't even told you yet about Jasper's plans. Sinley went over to open the doors, and Nick slipped inside, looking from one to the other.
I'm sorry, but I was starting to worry.
Lexi smiled at him, unable to contain her happiness.
Ah, I see,
Nick said. Do beg your pardon, I didn't mean to interrupt, but we should probably be getting back soon. I'll, wait outside a while longer.
No, stay.
Sinley stopped him by putting a hand on his arm. I'm very grateful to you for bringing Lexi. Please come in while she tells me the whole tale again. He winked at Lexi, who caught his meaning.
Oh, yes, I was just telling his lordship.
Jake? Sinley muttered.
Jake.
Lexi felt herself blush, and Nick grinned at her but stayed silent.
How Jasper's planning to waylay him tomorrow night on the way home from Lady Kettridge's party. He did say something about a rope, didn't he, Nick? We could only suppose he means to trip your horse or possibly unseat you somewhere along the way.
Jake. Nick nodded. Yes, and it would be an easy thing to find the rope and remove it, I suppose. But really, we need to catch Jasper red-handed. So if there is any way you could pretend to fall off your horse without actually being injured, he might come to make sure you're dead and then try and finish you off.
I see you have a high regard for your brother, Sinley commented with raised eyebrows.
Nick's jaw tightened. He's scum, my lord, if you'll pardon me saying so. I've suspected for a long time that he's involved in criminal activities, but since my father was always on his side, I could never do anything about it. Now my father's dead, I want nothing to do with Jasper, and neither do our sisters.
Sinley nodded. Very well. Let us set a little trap of our own, then. Come, sit down, and we'll work out a plan.
Chapter 10
Are you sure you don't mind staying behind, my dear? I feel so guilty going off without you, especially since he's my son.
Margaret was speaking in a hushed whisper just outside the door to Rupert's bedroom, and she did look concerned, as well she might, Lexi thought.
No, don't worry. You know card parties aren't my favourites. I'll be fine here with Rupert, and he seems a bit better now, so I can just sit and read in peace. Go and enjoy yourself.
Well, if you're absolutely certain, but do send a groom to fetch me if he should make a turn for the worse, won't you?
Of course.
Margaret left at last, and Lexi drew a sigh of relief. She waited until she'd heard the carriage pull away down the drive, and watched it until it was out of sight. Then she turned to Rupert with a huge smile.
"Well done! You were splendid! Sinley was right when he said he thought you'd pull it off."
Rupert grinned back and did a somersault on top of the bed covers, looking the picture of health.
"Eating chalk was your idea, though, and having all those hot bricks in my bed to make me look flushed."
He laughed.
"It was fun, wasn't it?"
Lexi turned a bit more serious.
"Yes, but you must promise me you'll never do this on your own. It was for a very special reason today, to help us catch a dangerous man, but we wouldn't want you to scare your poor mamma like this again. Do you understand?"
"Of course! I'm not a baby. Sinley explained it all to me during our ride this morning. He said I was a vital, something in his plan."
"Cog. Yes, that's right. I couldn't plead a headache again, or they might have become suspicious. This was much better. Now, if you just wait there a moment, I'm going to go down and let Nick in the back way."
Nick had pretended to leave that afternoon, saying that he'd neglected his sisters for too long. In actual fact, he'd first gone to Sinley Priory for a while, then come back to wait in the forest, until he too heard the sound of the carriage leaving. Lexi found him lurking in the shadows near the back door, and together they ascended the servant's stairs and went back into Rupert's room.
"Hello again. I take it you played your part to perfection?"
Nick went over to give Rupert a hug.
"Indeed he did," Lexi confirmed. "He should be on the stage, I tell you. He had everyone convinced. Now, how long do we have to wait before we leave?"
"A half hour or so, I should think. Time enough to read Rupert a story. Would you like that?"
"Capital."
It was dark in the forest, just like the previous night. Lexi would have been frightened if she'd been on her own. With Nick at her side, however, she felt safe, and the two loaded pistols in her pockets helped a great deal as well.
"I took the liberty of borrowing these from the carriage," Nick had said quietly when he handed them to her. "Sinley told me you're rather good with them."
"I hope he was right."
"I am, don't worry. I won't hurt myself or anyone else, except on purpose. But what about you?"
"I liberated another two from George's study. I saw that he had a pair of Manton's finest duelling pistols in there, although I must say I'm surprised he didn't take them with him."
"He couldn't very well do so to a card party, and presumably he thinks the ones I have are still in the carriage."
"Yes, of course."
They stayed on the forest tracks as much as possible, rather than taking a direct route, but eventually they came to the Kettridges' mansion. Sounds of laughter and conversation floated towards them on the wind, and there was a great deal of light spilling out of the windows. Carriages and horses waited on the drive in front of the entrance, and the coachmen all appeared to be having their own conference, huddled together in one corner. Nick and Lexi stayed well outside and dismounted. They walked their horses into a thicket near the road and settled down to wait.
"I don't think anyone would be able to see us in here," Nick whispered, "but we'd better stay quiet and as still as possible just in case." "I only hope Jasper hasn't set the trap already," Lexi replied. "Then we won't be able to warn Sinley." "No, how could he? If he'd tied a rope across the road before the party, he might harm someone else by mistake and the whole plan would fall through. It's my guess he'll either sneak out towards the end of the evening or leave a bit earlier than everyone else. Whichever it is, it's going to be a long wait."
Lexi sighed and prepared herself for boredom. Several hours crept by, and Lexi was becoming jittery with frustration.
"This is impossible," she muttered. "It's not going to work."
The longer they waited, the more things she could think of that might go wrong.
"Yes, it will," Nick sounded sure. "Sinley's plan was a good one, and as long as we follow it to the letter, everything will be all right." "I don't know."
Nick cut her off.
"Shh! Someone's coming."
There were footsteps crunching on the gravel of the drive. Then George's voice came hissing out of the darkness.
"It's too risky, I tell you. There must be a better way. Please, I beg of you, think again."
Nick and Lexi looked at each other and froze. When they peered out from behind the bushes that hid them, they saw George holding on to Jasper's bridle, while the latter fought to tug it out of George's hands.
"Let go, damn it. I'm tired of waiting, and this is the only way. No one will know, for heaven's sake. Someone rides too fast, the horse stumbles, they break their neck. Happens all the time. Now, are you coming or not?" "No, I don't want any part in this. You can keep your money. I'm on a winning streak anyway."
George turned to march back towards the mansion.
"Fine. Have it your way. I'll do this by myself."
Jasper muttered a few choice expletives and set off down the road at a gallop. Nick and Lexi waited until he'd rounded a bend before mounting their own horses and following him as quickly as they dared. Every time they came to a curve in the road, they slowed down and Nick jumped off and walked his horse until he could peer round to make sure Jasper was nowhere in sight. They stayed on the grass verge so as to make as little noise as possible. And about halfway towards Sinley Priory, their caution paid off. Nick returned from one of his observations and pointed up ahead, mouthing, "He's there." Plunging into the forest, they tethered their horses and continued on foot until they could see Jasper some 50 yards away. He'd chosen a particularly dark place along the road where huge trees overhung it, their branches intertwined to form a sort of tunnel. Lexi and Nick crept closer through the undergrowth, keeping out of sight. Jasper was intent on his own business and only stopped occasionally to listen for any sounds of danger. Lexi could barely make out the rope, and surmised that Jasper had darkened it somehow, perhaps with soot or dirt. The surface of the road was dry, and therefore lighter in colour, which was presumably why Jasper was tying the rope fairly high up. She estimated that it was at around the level of a horse's chest, and if someone rode full tilt into it, it would stop the horse in its tracks, and the rider would go flying headfirst onto the road. The thought made her shudder.
"Now what's he doing?" Lexi breathed in Nick's ear.
"Trying to find a good vantage point, I should think. I'm going closer. Can you stay here? If he gets away, fire at him just to frighten him. Otherwise, follow the plan."
"Very well."
Nick disappeared and Lexi shivered, not so much from the night air, which was balmy, but from nerves. She was terrified their plan would somehow backfire, and that Sinley would be hurt, or worse. She didn't think she could bear to lose him again, now that she'd finally found him, and he'd asked her to marry him. It would be the worst possible luck. She waited in tense silence, every nerve stretched to breaking point. She had no idea where Nick had positioned himself, but she hoped it was as close to the rope as they'd agreed with Sinley. At last she heard the sounds of a horse approaching and craned her neck to see. Her heart did an uncomfortable somersault when she caught sight of him. He was riding much too fast. "No, slow down," she wanted to shout at him, but she knew she had to stay hidden or their plan would fail. As he passed her, she swallowed hard and managed to make a sound like an owl out hunting. She and Nick had practiced it all morning, and although her throat felt very dry, she knew that Sinley had heard her, because he raised his whip as though to spur on the horse, but didn't bring it down. That was the signal they'd agreed upon, and he was now ready for the next step. When he was nearly upon the rope, another owl hoot echoed across the forest. Lexi had to admit that it sounded very real, and she would never have been able to guess it had been made by a human had she not known about it. As if startled by the noise, Sinley's horse began to buck and then leapt into the air, jumping neatly over the rope that was suspended between two trees. His back legs must have touched it because he stumbled a little upon landing. Sinley appeared to be struggling with the big animal, which was dancing around.
"Whoa, whoa there, boy," Lexi heard him saying.
She couldn't take her eyes off Sinley while she waited to see what Jasper would do next. She didn't have long to wait. A shot rang out, and Sinley pretended astonishment, then took off at full tilt down the road. Jasper erupted from the trees soon after, giving chase, and the two of them disappeared out of sight.
"Lexi? Lexi, are you there?"
"Yes, I'm here, Nick."
Nick came crashing through the undergrowth.
"Are your pistols ready?"
Lexi nodded.
"Come on, then. Let's go and stand in the middle of the road on the other side of that bend."
They did so, and waited. All was quiet for a while, and Lexi fought to quell the fear that rose within her again. What if Jasper had caught up with Sinley? What if he had shot him from behind in cold blood? It didn't bear thinking of.
"I can hear them coming. Wait for it," Nick hissed.
They both cocked their pistols and stood aiming straight ahead. Soon, Sinley came galloping past them, having led Jasper on a chase through the forest, so that they doubled back to the way they'd come. He swerved to a halt just behind them in a cloud of dust, then Jasper appeared, his murderous expression clear in the moonlight. When he caught sight of Lexi and Nick, however, he pulled hard on the reins, making his horse rear up.
"Damnation!"
they heard him shout as he wheeled the horse around. He fired off a shot at them before setting off in the opposite direction once more. But they ran after him and returned fire. Nick shot indiscriminately, aiming high. But Lexi stopped and took proper aim before pulling the trigger. She saw Jasper's horse jump and heard it neigh in fright. She very much hoped the animal wasn't hurt. She had only aimed at the ground next to his hooves in order to make him nervous. It seemed to be enough to throw the horse into a panic, and it took off, completely out of control. Sinley had by now set off after Jasper, and it was his turn to shoot. Jasper cried out and clutched one arm, at the same time as he was trying to slow his horse down. Lexi watched as he came closer and closer to the rope, which was still strung across the road, and she wondered how much further he would go before swerving off to avoid it.
"What's he doing?" Nick shouted. "Why doesn't he stop? He must know we have him trapped, the idiot!"
At the very last moment, Jasper managed to bring his horse under control and made it jump the rope in the same way that Sinley had done earlier, clearing it without any problems. They heard his laughter, taunting them. Then he turned around and stood up in the saddle, shouting something very vulgar, despite the fact that the horse kept going at a fast pace. In the next instant, however, his words were cut off when his head connected with a low tree branch and he was knocked out of the saddle.
"Oh, dear Lord," Lexi murmured.
She stood frozen to the spot for a moment before her limbs regained their movement, and she began to run towards Jasper, following Nick, who was already on his way. But Sinley, still on horseback, reached him first, and when the other two arrived, he'd already dismounted and was kneeling next to Jasper. He looked up and shook his head.
"I'm sorry, Nicholas. I didn't mean for this to happen."
Nick stood still and just stared at his brother for a few moments. Then he closed his eyes and fell to his knees, grasping Jasper's lifeless hand.
"Oh, no, I didn't want him to... I never wished him... dead."
His voice broke slightly, and he bent his head, then doubled over as if his body couldn't keep upright any more, because the weight of his grief was too much to bear.
"Oh, Nick."
Lexi patted his back awkwardly. She didn't know what else to do. Nothing would bring his brother back. Nick rocked back and forth a couple of times, then took a deep breath as if he was trying to gather his strength. He straightened up and looked at the others with a grim but determined expression.
"Perhaps it was best this way," he whispered. "I always knew he'd end badly. And this is preferable to what the law would have done to a would-be murderer. Will you tell the magistrate? Or shall I?"
Sinley put a hand on his shoulder.
"How about we just remove the rope and I ride to report that there's been an accident? No one need know exactly what happened here tonight. That way there will be no scandal attached to either your name or mine. What do you say?"
Nick looked up, blinking.
"Are you sure? But he tried to kill you. Don't you want retribution?"
Sinley shook his head.
"No. I've been talked about more than enough in my life, and I'd rather not give the gossip mongers any more grist for their mills. Besides, thanks to you and Lexi, he didn't succeed. I owe you a great deal."
"What about George?"
Lexi put in. "I hardly think he's going to admit to knowing anything about a murder plot, do you? It might even teach him a lesson so that he starts to think a bit more about the sort of company he's keeping."
"Yes, well, miracles do happen, they say," Lexi muttered.
"His lordship's right. And even if he did speak up, it would be his word against the three of us," Nick added. "Very well, that's settled then. Nick, please take Lexi home, and then come to Sinley Priory. As agreed, we'll say that I met up with you earlier in the day, and urged you to stay with me for a while, since we had some business to discuss."
"Will do."
Sinley turned to Lexi and gave her a small smile. "I'll be calling on you tomorrow, Miss Holloway, as I have something I would like to ask you."
Lexi managed a shaky smile back.
"I thought you already did."
"Ah, but I didn't actually receive an answer, as I recall."
"Oh, how very remiss of me."
"Indeed. You're sure you want to hear my question?"
Her smile widened. "I can't wait." Chapter 11. When Lexi came downstairs the following morning, it was to find a very morose George picking at his breakfast, while Margaret harangued him in a very unseemly fashion.
"And furthermore, I think it very inconsiderate of him to get himself killed while staying with us, so that all the arrangements have to be made by you, and no doubt paid for as well. It's not as if we're that flush at the moment, and what with one thing and another."
"Good morning, Margaret, George." Lexi had no hesitation in interrupting her sister, and she saw George heave a sigh of relief when his wife's monologue came to an end. "What's the matter, pray?"
"Oh, haven't you heard? It's Jasper.
He managed to fall off his horse and break his neck last night on the way home from the Ketteridges. Apparently he was found by Lord Sinley, who left soon after him. But he was already dead then, so there was nothing anybody could do.
Good grief. Lexi turned to George. Oh, I'm so sorry, you must be very upset. The two of you seemed close.
George squirmed in his seat.
Well, I wouldn't say close, exactly. He looked up to me, of course, since I'm his uncle, and I was showing him the ropes, but that was all, really. Can't believe he's gone.
Has anyone informed Nick? Lexi pretended alarm on his behalf. He'll be devastated.
Well, as luck would have it, he was staying with Sinley last night. The two of them had met up after Nick left here and he'd been invited to spend the night. I believe Sinley gave him the bad news. Not sure how he took it.
Oh, I must go and see him at once, poor boy, Lexi said. Perhaps Rupert and I could ride over to Sinley Priory? Margaret frowned.
Is that wise? Rupert might say something inappropriate. Besides, he was so ill yesterday. Although, to be sure, he's as right as rain this morning.
He won't say anything he shouldn't. I'll see to that. And a ride might do him good.
Very well, then, but don't stay long, for heaven's sake. And if you could find out whether Nick has any funds to pay for the funeral...
Margaret!
George scowled at her, putting his foot down at last.
Jasper was kin. There will be no quibbling over money.
If you say so.
Lexi and Rupert only got as far as the forest track, where they found Sinley and Nick waiting for them in the usual place. Lexi exchanged a glance with Sinley first, who gave her a reassuring smile, then with Nick. He was looking pale, but composed, and he too managed a reasonably cheerful expression.
"Nick, are you all right? Would you rather not see us today?" she asked.
She realised that she'd grown to like him a lot during his stay at Hawthorne, and she would be sad to see him leave.
"I'm fine. More than fine, actually," he said. "And I am very happy to see you both. I wanted you to be the first to know that I'm to be your new neighbour."
"How so?"
"You've bought a house?"
Rupert asked.
"Capital! Then we can play at dragon hunting every day."
Nick laughed.
"Perhaps not every day, but often in any case. No, I haven't bought a house. I'm to be given one."
He glanced at Sinley.
"His lordship..."
"Jake," Sinley put in, looking heavenward, as if searching for patience.
"Jake, then, has told me he's given me Dan's house and half the surrounding estate, because he thinks it ought to have belonged to my family in the first place. I'm not at all convinced, but he won't take no for an answer. We're seeing the lawyers tomorrow."
"I'm sure that had Catherine's husband known there is one Torrington who isn't a bad egg, he would happily have bequeathed the house to you," Sinley said. "He was only afraid that the whole of his fortune would be squandered on gambling, and I can well understand his concern, having watched my father do just that. But I doubt you'll ever be that stupid, and if you show even the slightest tendency to gaming, I'll beat it out of you."
The smile that accompanied this threat took any sting out of his words, and Nick grinned back. "You may be certain I'm not such a sapskull as all that, and with your mentoring I'm going to learn to look after the estate properly."
"That sounds wonderful," Lexi said. "The best possible solution in the circumstances."
"It also means I can have my nephews come to stay. I'm sure you'll enjoy playing with them, Rupert. When it comes to catching dragons, they're superb. And in between games, perhaps you could share a tutor."
"Excellent." Rupert was grinning from ear to ear.
"How about we ride ahead, you and I, and I'll tell you a bit more about them."
"Good idea."
Nick winked at Lexi and Sinley and rode off with Rupert, leaving them on their own. Sinley dismounted and held out his arms for Lexi to jump down.
"Let's walk, shall we? I can't talk to you from the back of a horse."
She took his arm, and they walked along the path, leaving the horses behind. As soon as Nick and Rupert had disappeared completely, however, Sinley stopped and dropped to one knee on the path, looking up at Lexi and taking her hands.
"Miss Holloway, will you do me the honour of becoming my wife? I know you gave me your tacit agreement the other night, but that may have been under duress because of the unusual circumstances. No one caught you, so you are in no way compromised, and I hope you don't feel obliged to say yes. Have you had time to consider properly?"
Lexi smiled down at him and put her hands on his shoulders. "There was no need for me to consider anything. The answer is yes, as it always has been, no matter what." He stood up and pulled her into his embrace.
"Always?"
"Yes. Ever since our meeting in the orangery, I've wanted to be yours. And even though I travelled far and wide trying to forget you, I couldn't."
"Does that mean you love me?"
She looked down, afraid of telling him, but unable to lie. "Of course I love you. I have done from that first moment. How could I not?" He smiled and pulled her close.
"I shall thank God for it daily, because I love you so much. I don't want to live another second without you. We must be married without delay. We've waited too long already. Here, I brought you something, but if you don't like it, we can change it for one that's more to your taste."
He pulled out a small box from his pocket and took out a ring that sparkled in the sunlight. It was a fairly plain design, but beautiful because of its simplicity, and made of gold with little sapphire set deep inside it in an undulating pattern. He put it on her finger, where it fit as if it had been made just for her.
"Oh, it's perfect. Thank you, Jake."
"At last she remembers my name," he joked.
But she never had a chance to reply, because he bent to kiss her, and nothing else mattered. Her world was complete. The end. You've been listening to Desperate Remedies by Christina Courtney, narrated by Julie Teal. If you've enjoyed this recording and would like to receive information on the latest titles, please contact us at the address on the cover. We will be pleased to send you a catalogue of available titles.